more confetti. We are indebted to Colleen L. Reese, the author, and the Pacific Press Publishing Association for the copyright. Your honorary reader is Muriel Ferris.
Section 1.
Chapter 1. More Than Confetti. Roxanne Evans pushed her sun-streaked brown hair back from her face. If she wasn't almost 15, she would have burst into tears. Instead, she fought the sickening feeling inside and tried to listen to what Dad was saying. No one else seemed disturbed. Mum was smiling even more with her dark blue eyes, which were so like Roxy's, than with her lips. Baby Ellen was lying peacefully on Mum's lap, watching a sunbeam move across the rug. The twins, 10-year-old Kevin and Kyle, were ecstatic. Roxy's heart sank lower when Kevin, the noisiest twin, let out a war whoop and said, "All right, who can beat this? A whole summer at Tillicum Lake." Roxy couldn't hold back her disappointment. "What's so great about that?" Kyle came to his twin's defense. "Everything, dummy. Where else could we get to be round camp after camp after camp all summer?" "That's enough, Kyle. You and Kevin are excused." Ray Evans' quiet command stilled them. He allowed no bickering among his children. His dark hair and eyes and tall leanness made him a special person, but not so much as his personality and faith in God. When the boys left, still muttering, he turned to Roxy. "All right, what's the trouble?" The sympathy in his voice almost broke the dam behind Roxy's eyes. "I don't want to spend the summer at Camp Tillicum Lake."
"You don't?"
Dad was jolted. "It's a perfect chance for our whole family to have time together. There are 100 things to do. Horseback riding, swimming." Roxy shuddered. "You know I can't swim." Dad's face softened. "So you grew up where there were no swimming holes and where you didn't have a chance to learn. Why don't you take a few lessons before we leave?" Roxy bit her lip. She wasn't about to confess she was terrified of the water. The few times her friends had persuaded her to go swimming with them, she only waded out to her knees. Patrice gently put Ellen in her crib and looked at her daughter with understanding eyes. "It isn't just the swimming, is it, Roxy?"
"No."
Roxy swallowed hard. "This was supposed to be such a special summer. I'll be 15 on the 4th of July, and my friends already told me they were giving me a real party. Fireworks and confetti and everything." One lone tear of self-pity slipped out. "I've tried so hard since we moved to Seattle to be a part of the group. Now that the youth group is really starting to like me, I have to go away for the summer. We'd planned to do so many neat things, visit the parks and the science center and that kind of stuff. Now I won't be here."
"Life is more than confetti," Dad tried to joke. Roxy ignored him. It hurt too much to know what she was going to miss.
"Think of the chances to meet church kids from all over," Mum reminded. "Every week there will be new people at Lake Tillicum."
"Oh, great. I do such a super job of meeting people."
Roxy's control nearly snapped. "It was hard enough coming to a city after living in the sticks forever. I had to give up all my friends. Why did we have to move from Carrollton anyway?" Visions of the small Montana cow town danced in Roxy's brain. Friends, the country school she had attended, the little white church were as fresh in memory as if she had left yesterday instead of months before.
"You know we felt God was calling us here," Dad said, but his eyes were troubled. "When I became a minister, I told God I would go wherever he wanted me to go. It still holds. I am needed at the lake this summer, and I want my family with me."
"Cheer up, Roxy, it won't be so bad. I know it isn't always easy being a minister's kid, but you've never complained this much before."
"I never had so much to lose before either."
Roxy's flat statement hung in the air.
Just what do you have to lose except a few plans? Dad's voice pinned her down. Roxy squirmed and studied her new Adidas. How could she tell Dad and Mum that Jeff Campbell was just starting to really notice her, or that good old Janice Ellsworth, faithful flirt, was ready to take over the second Roxy left town? By the time they all got up to the Up With Teens camp, Janice would have moved in. Dad and Mum would think she was too young to care about boys anyway, even nice ones like Jeff. I just don't want to go. Dad gave Mum one of his "I don't understand what's gotten into her" looks, and Roxy slid from her chair. I guess I'll call Heather, she added bitterly, while I'm still around to call her. Heather was everything a best friend should be, tall and cool, but warm-hearted and supportive. Her reaction to Roxy's, "My world just went smash, may I come over," was, "Sure, meet you halfway." Roxy pulled her raincoat on against the driving rain that matched her mood. A tiny flicker of warmth shot through her when she saw Heather running towards her. At least someone would understand what a catastrophe had overtaken her. She didn't tell Heather until they were cosily curled up on Heather's twin beds with a bucket of hot popcorn between them. Then she announced in a dramatic tone, "I am being exiled." The effect was satisfying. Heather sat up straight and her dark fringed grey eyes opened wide. "Really? Where and why?" "Dad's been assigned to Camp Tillicum Lake for the summer." Roxy watched the colour leave Heather's smooth face in surprise and touched her own freckled face surreptitiously, wishing she had skin like her friend. "And you have to go with him?" Heather looked crushed. "But what about all our plans, picnicking and hiking and all that?" She fixed her big eyes on her friend. "What about Jeff and Janice?" "Don't mention them," Roxy cringed. She could feel her shoulders slump in defeat. "There goes everything I want down the drain." Heather was still talking as if she hadn't heard. "What about your party?" She fixed an accusing stare on Roxy. "What about that? The fireworks and food and..." "Don't forget the confetti," Roxy filled in. "All my life I've wanted a confetti shower. Now the only shower I'll get will be rain showers in the woods." Dawning pity replaced some of Heather's indignation. She backed off and said, "Maybe it will be kind of fun. You haven't been out there yet, have you?" Roxy shook her head. "It's absolutely great. The lake and trees, you can see the snow-capped mountains." She warmed to her subject. Her eyes glowed. "It's incredibly beautiful. There are birds and squirrels and deer. Besides, Lake Tillicum camps are absolutely the best. The love that grows between the staff and the campers because of the presence of the Spirit of God changes lives. I wouldn't trade camp for anything." "I know that," Roxy interjected. "I was really looking forward to going to both the Up With Teens camp and the family camp, but to be stuck there all summer..." She looked squarely at Heather. "Would you want that?" I guess not." Heather's gaze fell. "Isn't there anything you can do about it? Is your mum going, with Ellen being so small and everything?" "Is she? You'd think she was a pioneer getting ready to travel on the Oregon Trail or something. You don't have to ask what the twins think either. I'm the only sour note in the Evans Go to Camp chorus." Misery swept over Roxy. Heather just sat for a minute as if she didn't know what to say. Then with a wild leap she was off the bed and out the door. "Be right back," she called over her shoulder. Roxy shrugged. Heather was always doing something like that. Even her room was decorated kind of strange. She had turned one wall into a seascape. Roxy usually avoided looking at the bigger-than-life rolling waves. They made her slightly seasick. "I suppose if I'm at the lake all summer, all I'll hear is how I could be swimming," she thought. She set her mouth stubbornly and stretched her slender frame to its full 5'5" height. "Well, I'm not going to swim. I may have to go to the lake, but I don't have to become a fish." There was some comfort in the little declaration of independence, and she sneered at the seascape wall. She barely got her face back into shape before Heather yelled for her to come downstairs. What now? Roxy mumbled, but obediently walked down the ruby-carpeted stairs, running her hand along the rail and enjoying its smooth coolness. In here, an impatient voice ordered. Roxy turned left and wound up in the kitchen. Mrs. Ames was as much like Heather as Roxy was like her mother. Her smile was quieter, but her hair and eyes were the same. Hello, Roxy. What's this I hear about your being gone all summer? Her keen eyes seemed to see right into Roxy. Unwilling to gripe too much, Roxy merely said, I guess that's the way it is. It doesn't have to be. Heather's face was flushed and she danced Roxy around the kitchen. What on earth? Roxy's heart pounded. Tell her, Mom. Heather finished the whirling dervish act in front of the counter where Mrs. Ames had just set warm cookies. Through a mouthful, she said again, Go ahead, Mom, before I burst. Tell me what? Roxy's fingers eagerly reached for cookies when Mrs. Ames offered them. If your parents are willing, we'd love to have a second daughter for the summer. You what? The cookies stopped halfway to Roxy's mouth. Excitement nearly choked her. You mean you're inviting me to stay here all summer? She couldn't believe her ears. It was too good to be true. If Mum and Dad let her, she wouldn't have to miss all the fun and her special birthday. She crowded out the thought of how her family always had neat birthday parties. It wouldn't hurt them. They'd be too busy at the lake. Heather couldn't keep still any longer. Isn't it the greatest? We'll still be going to family camp and up with teens camp, so it's not like you won't be seeing your family at all. She ran on, going over all the fun they'd have. She finished with, It's been so lonesome since my brother Danny enlisted. I think Mom's as excited as we are. A new thought struck her. You can, can't you? I mean, your folks won't say no or anything, will they? A shiver of fear lightly crept up Roxy's spine. I hope not. Let's go find out right now. Good idea, Mrs. Ames nodded. Just don't stay too long, Heather. I need you to help with supper. Good luck. By the time they'd walked halfway to Roxy's home, Roxy and Heather had decided there was no evident way the Evanses would say no. After all, what difference did it make for Roxy not to be there? Dad would be busy as camp director and Mom had Ellen. The boys could take care of themselves. Still, when they got into the living room, Roxy took a deep breath. They just had to let her stay. Her whole summer would be ruined, wasted, if they said no. Heather couldn't wait for Roxy to begin. Guess what, she blurted out. Mom says Roxy can stay with us this summer while you're at the lake. We've got it all figured out. We'll come up with the up-with teens and family camps. Mom really misses Danny and says another daughter is just what she needs. May I, Mom and Dad? Roxy's mouth went dry at the hesitant look on Mom's face and the slow settling of Dad's jaw. The signs weren't good. She renewed her campaign. We can be involved in the youth witnessing and service projects, and you don't really need me. You've just got to say yes. Heather flashed her wide smile and two dimples. We have such wonderful plans. We appreciate the invitation, Heather. We'll discuss it and let you know tomorrow, Dad smiled. But Roxy knew the subject was closed for then. Is it okay for Roxy to stay overnight with me tonight? Heather asked. Might as well, Mom smiled. Neither of you will sleep much anyway. Heather couldn't help coaxing just a little more. You'll really think hard about it, won't you? Her anxious grey eyes searched out Ray and Patrice Evans in turn. Of course, we never make decisions without considering exactly what's best for all. Something about Dad's words, for all, set Roxy's spine shivering again. She wanted to cry out, protest it concerned only her, not the entire family. She didn't, however. She simply told her parents goodbye and went home with Heather. The next morning the rain stopped. Brilliant sunshine broke overhead and showed the earth its goldenness. Shall I go home with you? Heather asked. Roxy had thought it out long after Heather had fallen asleep the night before. No, I'll call you as soon as I find out, but I'd rather be by myself in case. It's okay, Heather grinned. I'll say a prayer. I hope it works. Roxy waved and headed towards home. The Seattle street was so gorgeous, green lawns, early spring flowers. Her mind raced ahead to a whole summer in the lovely Ames home. Then it slowly returned to the present. She let herself into the house even more slowly, chills chasing all over her body. They couldn't say no. They just couldn't.
Roxy, Dad met her at the door. I know you'll be disappointed, but we've discussed it all thoroughly, and your mother and I have decided.
Roxy's nerves screamed. Would he never get it said?
Her fingers clenched into fists. Although it's nice of the Ames to ask you, we can't accept. Your place is with us this summer, at Camp Tillicum Lake.
Were the cold, hard words hers, Roxy wondered?
Yes. Roxy caught a gleam of pity in Dad's face, and then the fine mist she could no longer control blurred it as he repeated her sentence. At Camp Tillicum Lake. Chapter 2. Camp Tillicum Lake.
Is it going to rain all summer? Roxy asked her mother irritably. After that neat time earlier, it's done nothing but rain, rain, rain.
She pressed her face against the living room window of the house by Tillicum Lake and stared into the grey nothingness.
This place would be bad enough if it was nice, but with this awful drizzle...
Her voice died from sheer lack of effort.
Cheer up, it can't rain forever.
That's what those people Noah warned said. Roxy disconsolately turned from the window. At least if we were home we could go shopping in one of the malls or visit the science centre or something.
She twitched her hair out of her eyes and dropped to the couch. At least it's cosy in here, Mom reminded.
Roxy saw how her eyes travelled from blazing fire in the great fireplace around the spacious room.
It was nice. Roxy had to admit that. Her ideas of having to live in some glorified tent had to be reshuffled when they got to the home they would share for the summer.
Low and rambling, it faced the lake and was tastefully decorated. Roxy's own room overlooked deep woods, but so far she hadn't even seen a squirrel. Roxy stared into the flames, remembering the trip to Camp Tillicum Lake. Kevin and Kyle had chatted about how neat everything was going to be, until Roxy had to bite her lips to keep from shrieking at them. And the road. Even now she could feel the jolting after they left the freeway. Then the state road, then the country road, and travelled 5 miles into the camp. Dad had shifted to the lowest gear and laughed. They'll be travelling the road before camps actually start. Right now we can pretend we're pioneers and these are wagon tracks into our night stop.
Roxy didn't answer. She just looked out the window into the overhanging branches that were shutting her away from her friends.
That had been 2 days ago. All the Evans family had been able to do since was get unpacked. It had been too soaking wet to see the grounds or all the outpost places Heather had told her about in an effort to cheer her up.
Our counsellor training camp starts next week.
Mom busily sorted socks, one pile for the all right ones and another for those that needed mending.
A flicker of interest caught Roxy. Who gets to be counsellors?
Our church college kids. They come for the whole summer. You'll be involved with them, of course.
I will? How come?
Roxy sat up straight. Camp directors' families are expected to be involved in all the camps of the summer, not just any they might be signed up for. You'll be in classes and recreation.
Roxy lost the rest. Hot indignation flowed through her. Her blue eyes flashed.
You mean even when it's little kids' camp?
She couldn't believe her ears.
That's right. Mom's firm gaze met that of her rebellious daughter.
No room for pouting or loafing at Camp Tillicum.
But I thought Tillicum was an Indian word for friend. Now you tell me I've got to do a bunch of stuff I don't like and...
How do you know what you like and dislike when you haven't even bothered to find out what's going on?
Kevin appeared in the doorway, a jam sandwich in one hand.
"Yeah, Roxy," Kyle, the peacemaker, tried to reassure her. "Why don't you put on your raincoat and we'll show you round?"
Roxy started to say no, but something in his anxious face stopped her. It wasn't the twins' fault she had to be here. Kyle always tried to make her feel better. She might as well go with them.
"Okay, I'll get into rain gear."
She even managed to laugh.
I suppose you've seen everything already.
Not everything, but a lot.
Come on, Roxy, Kevin called.
For 2 hours, Roxy forgot her troubles. Did they start disappearing when the twins led her to the Indian village location and told her how the staff did special campfire dramas at different places?
or when they reached the wagon train setting and she learned how Western scenes were reenacted, or maybe when she discovered there was going to be a rodeo. Maybe things wouldn't be so bad after all. Roxy came back to Earth with a thud when Carl added enthusiastically, "There are picnics too and special water Olympics." He didn't seem to be aware of her shiver. "This is a man-made lake. They dammed up a mountain stream a long time ago." Roxy stuck one hand in the water and jerked it back. "It's freezing." "Won't be so cold after the sun shines on it for a while," Carl promised. Back to reality, Roxy noticed it was pouring again. "Let's go back." She sloshed across the fields without paying much attention to the individual cabins, large dining hall and nurse's station, the twins pointed out. Misery over the swimming situation had reclaimed her. She poured it all out in a letter to Heather later that afternoon. Then, in an effort not to sound like a disappointed kid, she added, "At least the staff will be coming soon. Of course they're college kids, but maybe they won't think I'm too young. Too bad Jeff isn't a staff member." The next week flew. Roxy was caught up in camp life in spite of herself. How could she help it with all that was going on around her? The staff was practicing for dramas and still life presentations, testing equipment for swimming, water skiing, canoeing, and rappelling. Roxy was open-mouthed at the tree where campers would practice with the ropes before rappelling down a 150-foot cliff not far from camp. Not for her, thanks. Late one evening she took a walk in the woods. By now she was familiar enough with the general area not to get lost, and not to go so far that she could get lost. With almost 200 acres and only a small lake part of it cleared, plus various other smaller areas, there was always that danger. A few brave sun rays felt their way through the deep evergreen timber to the needle-strewn path she followed. A Stella's jay scolded, and high above she saw a blue heron floating in the blue sky. Robins and woodpeckers added their voices until the forest was no longer quiet. A brown rabbit hopped into the path, eyed her solemnly, and leisurely hopped off. Chipmunks and squirrels chattered contentedly. She rounded the bend and caught her breath. Three deer and a larger animal, it must be an elk, grazed in a small meadow. Roxy's heart pounded. There was nothing like this in Seattle, except in the zoo. She watched until they ambled away. When she retraced her steps, it was thoughtfully. Now chickadees were calling, night birds plaintively reminding her night would soon be here. "God," she spoke almost reverently, and wondered why her voice sounded so loud, and realized that when she spoke, the sounds of the wildlife paused momentarily. "It's really pretty neat up here, all the staff getting ready to present things that will help kids get to know you better. The animals and birds and stuff." She thought of the coyote chorus across the lake at nights, and the red fox she'd seen. "Yes, you've always been my friend, but I never really saw you as creator as much as since I've been here at Camp Tillicum Lake. I can't promise I won't be sorry again this summer because I'm missing Heather and Seattle and what's happening in Seattle, but right now I'm glad I came." She didn't remember ever talking to God like that before. Usually she prayed quietly at her bedside. Now she added, "Thanks, dear Lord, for having patience with me." In a rush of honesty, she finished with, "And thanks for Mom and Dad and the twins putting up with me, too." Then she raced down the shadow-darkened trail and back to the lighted windows welcoming her home. She pulled up in front of the house, loving the way the slanting sun's last rays reflected from the lake. Why, it really was home, at least for the summer. The discovery was in her voice as she opened the door and yelled, "Where's everybody?" She could hardly wait to get into the living room to tell them about all the neat animals and birds she'd seen. The first campers arrived a few days later. There would be just one camp this week. Sometimes there were two or three at one time. The vastness of the camp facilities allowed the holding of several camps at the same time. When this happened, everyone ate and attended campfires together, but classes and activities differed according to age and interest. "I'm glad our camp's first," Kevin strutted. "Junior Trails for 10 and 11-year-olds is probably the best camp of all." His skinny but strong fingers were working a bit of rope. I'm going to learn to rappel. He thought for a minute. No, maybe I'll stick with horsemanship. What about you, Carl?
I'm going for animal tracking. Carl's eyes brightened. I can hardly wait. There are cougar and bear tracks back in the hills, and we're going to practice following them.
How about you, Roxy? Dad looked at his daughter as if approving her sudden change of attitude.
Missy Thompson asked me to help her with some of the nature classes, mosses and edible plants and all that kind of stuff.
It's okay, isn't it?
Sure, you're old enough to be responsible. Our staff can use extra help, especially with the camps for the younger children.
We aren't that much younger, Kevin shot back.
Roxy messed up his hair and grinned as she passed him. When the twins weren't making a career of being a pain in the neck, they were really all right kids.
I'm really glad Missy came, she told Mom later. She's taught me a lot.
She closed her lips to keep back Missy's secret, the one the older girl had shared and that had helped Roxy adjust to summer at camp, a lot quicker than she would have thought possible. Roxy's hand slowed with the dish towel she had been using to dry out the sink. Missy had found her moping by herself the first day the counselors arrived for training.
Hi, I'm Missy. Why the gloom?
The shining brown eyes in a tanned elfin face were irresistible. A few freckles highlighted her up-tilted nose.
I'm Roxanne. Roxy. My dad's camp director and I'm stuck here for the summer.
Roxy flushed dark red. She hadn't meant to blurt it out so crudely.
I know how you feel. I felt the same way last year.
Really? Roxy was all ears. How come?
I had plans for a trip. My folks' business went sour and the trip was cancelled. I needed a job and this seemed like a good way to earn some money.
Missy grimaced. Can you keep a secret?
You bet.
Something about this counsellor intrigued Roxy.
I think God planned for me to get the job. With my attitude, I don't know how I ever passed all the things a person needs to be to get to be a staff member. It's an honour and a privilege, not just a job. It takes dedication. Anyway, she looked across the quiet lake. I managed to hide my real feelings. Or maybe deep down I knew it was something pretty special.
How long did it take you to find out you liked it?
Roxy held her breath.
One camp. Within a few days, having responsibility for leading kids to Christ through a joyous camp experience made my own problems seem selfish and small. By the end of the week, although others may not have known it, I had made a recommitment to the Lord to serve Him.
Roxy's eyes stung at the peace in Missy's confession.
I really appreciate your sharing with me. She swallowed hard. It wasn't easy, was it?
Missy's beautiful brown eyes softened into a smile. Let's just say that sometimes we meet people who we feel are going to be real friends. I won't have a lot of free time, but now and then maybe we can get together.
She smiled again. Want to help with my classes when you aren't involved elsewhere?
You bet.
Missy had been right. There was little time for the forming of close friendships on a one-to-one basis, yet somehow Roxy felt comforted. As she wrung out the towel and hung it to dry, she couldn't help remembering Missy saying she believed God had planned for her to come to camp. What if God had done the same for Roxy? It was a startling thought, something to think about if things got overwhelming.
Chapter 3. Learning to Swim. Junior Trails Camp was in full swing. Roxy only saw Kevin and Kyle from a distance, always hanging around their counsellor, but she could tell what a great time they were having. They yelled across the grounds every time they caught sight of her. Once Kyle broke free from his cabin group to race over to her and brag, "Our cabin is racking up points like crazy. We're going to be an honour cabin."
"What's an honour cabin?" Rixie wanted to know.
"Girls." Kyle's usually patient personality slipped and he rolled his eyes. "We get points for having a clean cabin, getting to class and meals on time and stuff like that. At the end of the week, whichever cabin has the best score gets a blue flag and is an honour cabin. You'll do the same thing, so you better start picking up your clothes and get in practice."
He dodged her pretended attack.
"Come on, Kyle," Kevin hollered. "Our cabin's ready to go."
"See you later."
Kyle grinned and ran back to his group.
That evening, Roxy made a special point to tidy her room.
Carl was right as far as the way she took care of her clothes, and the last thing she wanted when she was in a cabin was for them to be marked down because of her. She also took some time to be with Ellen. With the boys so involved in activities, Roxy fancied the baby missed the usual confusion in the house. Roxy's days began to fall into sameness. The valley sounded at 7:30 and would be followed by morning watch devotions, flag raising, breakfast and duties, then inspection and camp council, where the pastor of the week spoke to the campers seriously about their lives. Classes fell into three categories: nature, recreational and crafts. Campers were allowed to choose what they wanted to take. Roxy hadn't believed there could be so many different things going on. In addition to the general swimming and canoeing and water skiing, for which campers could sign up, there were horsemanship, rappelling, archery and other things. She passed up the waterfront activities, but was beginning to like horseback riding. Leathercraft, photography, glass painting, first aid and auto mechanics were only a few of the crafts available. Best of all to Roxy were the nature periods when she helped Missy. One afternoon she confessed, "I sure never knew much about what in the woods is edible." Missy laughed and her face wrinkled. "God's put it all there, but we have to learn to distinguish between what harms us and what's good for us." She grew serious as she told the class of 10 and 11-year-olds, "It's the same in life. Sometimes things like this," she pointed to a nearby vine, "look okay, don't they? But they aren't. That vine is poisonous. You'll see we left it there as a lesson, but screened it off so no one can touch it. In life, God doesn't always screen off what isn't good for us. He expects us to learn to stay away on our own after we've prayed for guidance." When the class was over, Roxy slowly said, You work in God's love through everything you do, don't you?" "That's what camp's all about," Missy explained. "Isn't it what you expected?" Roxy shook her head, and a pine needle that had stuck in her light brown hair fell to the ground. "When I stopped to think about it at all, I thought it would be a bunch of little kid stuff, plus maybe some sermons. I didn't realize that every single thing would be related to God and His purpose. The whole idea of camp is to show that life is more than fun and games, more than confetti." "More than confetti?" Missy cocked an eyebrow. "What's that?" Suddenly Roxy found herself sharing with Missy the rest of the story of how she hadn't wanted to come to camp. "I told you I didn't want to come, but I didn't say why. A lot was because of my birthday on July the 4th. She saw Missy was about to speak, but rushed on. "Heather was going to give me a fantastic party and end with a confetti shower. Ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to be in the midst of swirling confetti." She glanced at Missy to see if she was laughing at the confession. Missy wasn't laughing. "I think you'll find our 4th of July celebration beats any party you could have had." She smiled mysteriously and shook her head. "I won't say any more, but believe me, you'll like it." She jumped up from the stump she'd been perched on. "Whoops, got to get back to my cherubs and see that they're getting ready for dinner." Roxy could scarcely contain her curiosity. She sighed. It was still a few weeks until the 4th. She'd just have to wait. Every day she got deeper into camp's schedule. Duties, rest, more classes, special events, then preparing for supper, more duties, unit projects and activities, getting ready for campfires, flag lowering, campfire, then getting ready for bed. Of course, when she was in a cabin rather than her own house, there would be cabin reflections. For now, she did a lot of end-of-the-day reflecting on her own. By the time taps sounded and the camp fell silent, she was usually asleep. All the fresh air and the good food sort of that. The middle of the week at Junior Trails Camp brought a round of laughter when everyone gathered for breakfast. There was a huge sign over the door: "Cooks are sometimes sleepyheads too." "What on earth?" Roxy muttered to Dad and then howled. There were the cooks, flipping whole wheat pancakes, pouring juice and doing all the usual cooking duties, and each was in pyjamas, robe, curlers and caps. Later in the week, the cooks appeared in formal clothes for supper. Each had a wide ribbon stretched across her front with a title: Miss Slicer, Miss Baker, Miss Cook, Miss Grill, and so on.
A little later, the cooks took part in a take-off on a game show, and the campers voted on them after hearing their reasons why they thought what they were doing was so important. The winner was Miss Cook, who stated simply, "Cooking is the way to a man's heart. That's how I got my husband." She was presented with a stalk of celery and a crown. "I never knew religion could be so much fun," Roxy overheard one of Mrs. Camper say. She waited eagerly for Mrs. reply. "God intended us to have joy and to know he is with us in all things." Roxy slipped away by herself after that. The thought that had come earlier as to if God might have led her here returned. Suppose God knew her Christian walk with him had become a little less important than it once was. She squirmed, remembering the many times she had been just too tired to study her Sabbath school lesson or read her Bible. Maybe she could make an out-of-season resolution to change things. The one thing that haunted Roxy about the summer was her inability to swim. Sooner or later she was going to be forced to admit her fear of water. It came sooner than she had planned. Junior Trails was over. The following week was going to be the blind camp. 50 campers had signed up for it. "Blind camp?" Roxy had gasped when she heard about it. "You mean blind people out here? What can they do?" "Just about anything sighted people can do," Mom stated matter-of-factly. "I think you're in for a big shock, Roxy. Wait until you see some of them." "How old are they?" Roxy wanted to know. "From 9 to 19, Mom added almost too casually. "By the way, your father and I have talked it over, and we feel that this week you should learn to swim." "What?" Roxy's eyes darkened. She could feel fear force adrenaline through her body. "Why now? Why can't I wait until next fall and take swimming lessons at the Y or something?" "You don't need to be ashamed that you're afraid of water, Roxy." Roxy could feel the struggle within her. "I want to be able to swim, Mum, I really do. But every time I get out past my knees, it's like something dark and gruesome is going to pull me down. I've even dreamed about it." "Have you ever prayed about it?" Mum asked. "No, I haven't. I never even thought about praying about being scared of the water. Would God care about anything that small?" This was a new thought to Roxy. Mum's smile was like the sun rising. "He cares about everything, large or small, that troubles us." Roxy thought that one over for a few minutes. "If I ask God to take away the fear, will he?" "I can't tell you that he will actually remove the fear. I can tell you that he will answer. It may be by giving you extra courage so you can face the fear and lick it." 2 days later, Roxy clutched Mom's hand tightly and shivered in the pretty new one-piece blue swimsuit Mum had brought to camp without Roxy knowing. Along with 5 others, all blind except herself, she huddled on the dock listening to Charlene Rutherford, their swimming instructor. "The water is not your enemy," Charlene was stressing. She was a tall, strong girl in a racing swimsuit with the insignia of a senior life-saving certificate holder. "It has a natural buoyancy. It will help you float if you don't fight it. The water itself is your best friend when you're learning to swim, although it's easier for small children to learn because they haven't built up resistance to the idea." She shot a challenging but understanding look at Roxy. "You can and will learn to swim. I'll be right here with you every minute, and so will Chuck, our other instructor on duty just now." Roxy felt a bit reassured as one by one the instructors led the students into the water. At least no one except the instructors could see how awkwardly she followed instructions. "Put your face in the water and blow bubbles out," Charlene told him. "Please, God, help me not to be scared." Had she spoken out loud? No, none of the others gave any sign of hearing her. Roxy obediently lowered her face, took a deep breath, and began to blow out even before her face was underwater. The cold water made her instinctively jerk her head up the instant she ducked her face. Wow, was it ever cold! Yet when she looked around and saw the others doing exactly as Charlene had told them, Roxy felt ashamed of her reaction. If they could do it, so could she.
Gradually, class after class, Charlene coaxed and helped the beginning swimmers until all of them could swim across a special small enclosure. "You can stand up at any time," she encouraged. "The water isn't more than shoulder deep." "What about when we get into deep water?" One of the boys turned an anxious face toward Charlene. She rumpled his wet hair and laughed easily. "You won't be going into deep water until you're ready." "And that will be never," Roxy mentally added. She was comfortable with what she'd learned, but the idea of deep water still scared her. "How about a canoe ride?" Kevin asked Roxy later that afternoon. "I don't know." She eyed the bright canoe doubtfully. "Aren't canoes supposed to be awfully tippy?" "No, the old ones were, but you can't tip these." He saw she wasn't convinced and swayed the canoe to show her. "It's safe. Besides, Charlene taking a couple of campers out, and there's just room for us two more." "Well, if she's going..." Roxy reluctantly allowed Kevin to buckle her into a life jacket. Kevin hopped into the canoe with the agility of a monkey in a mango tree, and Roxy slowly followed to the edge of the dock. "Just take my hand and step down into the canoe," Kevin told her. "What if I miss the boat?" Kevin laughed as if she'd made the pun on purpose. "You won't. Come on." Still unconvinced, Roxy poised on the edge of the dock, stretched her hand out, grabbed Kevin's skinny fingers and started to step down. In her nervousness, she unconsciously gave a kind of flying leap, just enough to push the canoe away a few feet and leave an expanse of water between dock and canoe. Her fingers tightened convulsively on Kevin's. She saw Charlene reach for her and miss. The next minute, she plunged into the water. Forgetting her life jacket that would bounce her to the top in a few seconds, Roxy opened her mouth to scream for help, got a mouthful of lake water and thought, "God, why didn't you keep me safe?" As she frantically beat with her arms and kicked against the fear, she thought she had conquered. Chapter 4. Getting into the Swing of Things. "Where are you, God?" Roxy's mind shrieked as she sank into the lake. Every dream of something dark and gruesome returned until she thought she was going mad. The next moment, although it seemed like hours, she shot to the top, upheld by the buoyancy of her life jacket. Bobbing a few feet from the canoe, choking and sputtering, she blubbered with relief. "Hey, Roxy got dunked." Kevin's big grin spread across his freckled face. Roxy only stared. Was it possible he didn't know how scared she'd been? How could he help seeing the tears streaming from her eyes? Or did he think they were lake water? For a second she felt like yelling at him. Then pride took over. She silently paddled to the dock and climbed the ladder. "Try again," Charlene told her. Roxy could feel fear tighten her muscles. She was tempted to shake her head. Then she stubbornly set her lips in a straight line. Mom had said God might not take away the fear, but give her the courage to face things. She wouldn't be a quitter. This time she made it safely into the canoe. One of the younger campers snuggled up next to her. "Was it awful falling into the water?" Her sightless eyes turned toward Roxy, and Roxy could feel fear in her question. So much depended on her answer. She quieted her still quivering lips and said, "I have my life jacket on, you know. It's like puffy arms that lift you back out of the water and hold you up." "Just like God's arms?" Roxy was shocked by the innocent question. She gazed into the 9-year-old's face. "God's arms? Sure, doesn't he take care of us if we let him?" Roxy mumbled something that must have been satisfactory because the younger girl stopped asking questions and trailed her hand in the water. But for the rest of the canoe ride, Roxy was very silent. Even the flowing movement of the canoe held no terrors. She was too busy thinking. Here she was, almost 15 years old. She should be able to recognize God's loving care better than younger kids.
Section 2.
Roxy hung on to that rather startling thought that God helps us if we let him. Every day she noticed things, seeing through new eyes as she showed them to others who could only see with hearts and minds.
She became a favourite of the younger campers because of her ability to tell them colourfully what the forest and animals were like. "Be still," she told them on nature walks. "We have to step quietly like the Indian people used to do if we want to see the animals." Roxy hated to see the camp end. She felt the same way at the end of every camp. There was something so special about the final services, and the ending of the blind camp was extra special. The little girl who had been so afraid of the water had learned so much of God's love and the gift of his son that she was baptized at the end of the week. The lake had never been more beautiful than when Ray Evans led the small girl into the water and baptized her. Roxy had to blink hard. There had been no fear in the girl's face, just perfect trust as Ray took her hand. That perfect trust was the incentive Roxy needed to stick with her swimming lessons. It was a lot harder going into the advanced beginners the next week, especially since junior trailmakers was for 11 and 12-year-olds who were active and eager. She bit her lip as they outstripped her time after time. Only her dogged determination and Charlene's encouragement kept her at it. The first time she swam to the float, her breathing was shallow and frightened. A few feet from her destination, she nearly panicked. Would she ever make those last few feet? She did. Charlene was there to pull her up on the float with a hearty, "Good on you, Roxy. I knew you could do it." Panting, out of breath, Roxy let triumph sweep through her. Yet when it was time to go back in the water and swim towards the dock, the expanse looked wider than Lake Washington. She cautiously let herself into the water and swam as fast as she could. "You'd think that after a while I'd get over being scared," she complained to Mom when they were alone one day. "Instead, every time I go in the water, I'm scared all over again." Deliberately putting yourself on the line when something inside is telling you to quit shows that you're conquering your fear, Mom praised. "I always pray the fear will go away, but it hasn't yet," Roxy sighed. "And yet I feel God is hearing my prayers. I even feel he's answering them, or I probably would never have learned to swim. But it would be a lot easier if I weren't so scared." Roxy's birthday fell in the middle of junior trailmakers camp. The 4th of July was the brightest, clearest day they'd had so far. Roxy couldn't help a few minutes of regret when she saw how beautiful it was. "I could have been at Heather's," she whispered to the inquisitive squirrel peeking in through her window with bright eyes. "It's a perfect day for the party I'm not going to have." It was also a perfect day for camp. Roxy knew some of the special plans from having helped Missy. The theme of the week was Appreciate Your Heritage. Each day the theme had been presented in some way, showing how important freedom was and what sacrifices had been required in order to get it. Singing, storytelling and drama presented the same idea in many ways. The day seemed to race by on greased wheels. Everyone participated in the Water Olympics. Even Roxy did a bit of swimming before enviously watching other campers do incredible swimming tricks. Would she ever lose her fear enough to try water skiing or fancy swimming? "Look at the cooks!" Kyle pointed to where the cooks were setting out a gigantic picnic meal. Roxy forgot her lonesomeness for Heather at the sight of the cooks. They wore life jackets and masks and fins in honour of the Water Olympics. For the rest of the day, Roxy managed to keep busy enough so the little empty spot in her heart was mostly ignored. It wasn't until she was preparing for campfire that it grew until it threatened to choke her. Camp was great, but if only her birthday could have been different. "Come on, Roxy," Kevin urged. "Let's go over to the campfire. I hear it's going to be super." The staff seemed to have outdone itself with the 4th of July campfire. Scenes from history stirred watchers as various staff members portrayed those in the past who had given their lives for freedom. Roxy was held spellbound. They were so real. The staff members had studied hard, and when the martyred Stephen, Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy and others gave their talks, it was like actually meeting those famous historical figures. "Ask not what your country can do for you," Kennedy had challenged. "Ask what you can do for your country."
Roxy's face flushed hot. How many times had she taken freedom for granted? The pageant went on, likening freedom of people's lives to freedom for their souls. The last scene was from the Bible. Freedom always requires a price, the narrator said, as a special light was turned on a scene depicting Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. The next instant the soldiers came, the disciples fled, and Jesus was taken away. Roxy had seen enough. She slipped away as soon as the campfire was over and went quietly to her room. The gifts Mom and Dad and the twins had given her earlier that day lay on her bed. She carefully put them away and knelt with her face in the spread. Dad said life was more than confetti, God, and I didn't understand what he meant. I've been selfish. Please forgive me. She stayed on her knees a long time and then showered and slipped into bed. Images from the campfire danced in the darkness, and she fell asleep, still seeing the way Jesus had been taken away by the soldiers. Family camp, horsemanship and gymnastics all came the same week. Heather and her parents arrived and were almost smothered by Roxy's exuberant greetings. "I can't wait to tell you everything," both girls cried. "I'm glad you got here a little early," Roxy added. "Come on for a walk and we'll catch up on everything." Heather's eyes sparkled. "Jeff said to tell you his hi first thing and that he'll see you at the Up With Teens camp soon." "He did?" Roxy stopped in her tracks and grinned. She could feel her face turning red and didn't even care, not with Heather. "Didn't Janice move in?" "She tried," Heather shrugged. "Jeff's been with her some, but no more than with some of the other girls." She tossed her dark head. "I think he has other interests." "Fat chance of spending time together here," Roxy complained. "Everything's so busy there's no time for dating." "It doesn't matter," Heather told her. "Just being here and sharing the camp experiences makes us special friends." She lifted inquisitive eyebrows. "So how's it going?" "Great. I had some real pangs on my birthday, but then..." She poured out all the neat things that had happened during the summer. "I can see why you like it so much." Heather turned serious. "Funny, when you get away from camp during the rest of the year, you forget part of how neat it really is." Her eyes swept the grounds, lingered on the whispering lake and came back to Roxy. "Then when you get here, you wish you'd never had to leave, even some of those who didn't want to come at first." "I know what you mean," Roxy admitted. "One of the greatest things that happened all summer was during this last week. I was walking across the grounds and saw a girl about 12 sidling into the trees away from her cabin unit group. I followed her and she was sitting on the moss crying. Her name was Tammy, and she didn't belong to our church." "About 30% of the campers aren't church members," Heather said. "Yeah, I know. Anyway, she hated the whole idea of coming to camp. She wanted to go with her mother on her vacation, but her mother remarried and didn't want Tammy around for a few days, so she shipped her off to camp." "Not the best way to get anything out of camp," Heather put in. "What did you do?" "I told her I knew how she felt, that I'd felt the same way, until the word Missy wouldn't come out." Roxy remembered her promise and finished her sentence, "until someone who had been through the same thing shared her feelings with me." "Did Tammy buy it?" "Not completely. I did ask her just to give it a chance, to try to forget her disappointment and get involved with all the activities. I told her she had to be here only a week and then she'd be back home." "What happened?" Heather was all interest. Roxy smiled. "At first she held back, then I watched her cabin counselor make special efforts to see she was always made to feel an important part of the unit. I stopped and talked with her every time I saw her. By the middle of the week she'd lost some of her hurt and anger, and by the end of the week..." Roxy paused dramatically. "Go on." "You know how at the first campfire the staff members light candles and make a circle around the campus and tell them that during the week they will be encircled by their love and God's?" "It's one of the neatest parts of camp," Heather said. "Well, at the final campfire they did the same in a really neat send-off service. I managed to sit with Tammy since I wasn't assigned to a cabin group." Big tears slid down her face and she whispered,
I don't want to go home.
But that wasn't all. During Sabbath school, everyone was asked to write some of his feelings and check if he was interested in receiving more instruction. Tammy told me afterwards she had learned to know how much Jesus loved her, and if her parents would let her, she wanted to be baptized.
Will her folks let her, do you think? Heather wanted to know.
I don't know, Roxy admitted. Sometimes parents who haven't experienced what we get up here can't really understand. They think it's a bunch of emotion and all that, and that it won't last. Heather's eyes darkened. I wish every one of our church members and everyone else could just feel and see what happens when people live together according to God's law. She broke the serious mood with an irrepressible giggle. Do you suppose if I invited the President of the United States and the head of Russia, they might come next year?
Goon.
Roxy brushed the needles from her jeans and stretched and then grinned. On the other hand, who knows? I can say this, if they ever did, the world couldn't help but be a better place. No one could live in this environment for long and not forget wanting to argue.
That's for sure. Heather paused and then challenged. Race you back to camp.
She headed down the trail with Roxy right behind her. Chapter 5. A Serious Accident. Family camp was a little different from other camps. Activities and services were optional for the grown-ups. However, Roxy noticed it didn't seem to make any difference. She seldom saw anyone on the ground loafing when something was scheduled. By signing up for the same classes, she and Heather got to spend a lot of time together. "You know you've really changed this summer," Heather told Roxy one afternoon during free time. The two were lying on their backs under a gigantic tree, looking up through its branches to the blue sky with whipped cream clouds.
"Really?"
Roxy sat up suddenly, feeling a warm flood of feeling go through her.
"How?"
"You're really a lot more grown up." Heather shrugged her shoulders. She shook her dark hair back over her shoulders and grinned. "It's hard to put into words, but it's there, like the way you've been sticking with swimming when it isn't your favourite thing to do."
"You noticed, huh?"
Roxy returned her friend's grin. "One of these days I'm going to start enjoying swimming instead of having to force myself to do it." "I'm glad our camp doesn't go in for competitive sports except in competition against ourselves." Roxy had never seen Heather so serious. Some of our friends talk about how they almost quit going to camp because there was so much stress on everyone participating in volleyball and softball, which involve a lot of competition. Those who aren't interested or aren't very good really feel left out.
"Thank heavens it isn't like that here," Roxy exclaimed. "It's bad enough trying to improve my own swimming. If I felt I had to compete with others, I'd probably stow away when someone left."
Heather's face shadowed. "Mom says you can still come back with us if your folks have changed their minds." She gave Roxy a piercing look. "Or maybe you don't want to." Roxy didn't answer for a long time, just stared at the cloud formations. It probably wouldn't do any good to ask. On the other hand, what if they said yes? Her heart thumped. It was so good being with Heather again, and her lovely home back in the city was such a neat place. She could see Jeff, and her mind trailed off at the thought. Memory of his laughing face formed in her mind. Could he really be as great as she remembered him? For a second she almost told Heather she'd ask her folks again. Then something in Heather's eyes stopped her.
Was it longing? A little envy?
Roxy chose her words carefully.
"You know you're my best friend."
"Uh-huh." Heather clasped her hands behind her head and smirked. "You also know I love being with you." Roxy paused, fumbling for words. Heather beat her to it. "But now that you're in the routine and have seen what it's really like here at Camp Tillicum Lake, you don't want to leave, even for me."
"Something like that." Roxy scanned Heather's face anxiously. "You understand, don't you?"
"I really do." Their eyes met in a look of complete understanding. "I think I'd feel the same way. Besides," she added practically, "it isn't long until Up With Teens camp and I'll be back. I don't suppose there's any chance getting to be in the same cabin unit, is there?" Roxy shook her head. Not really. They like to assign best friends to different units so there aren't a bunch of gruesome twosomes sticking together and not getting acquainted with others.
Thanks a lot. Heather's grey eyes flashed in mock anger.
Don't be dumb. Us is excluded.
Roxy dodged Heather's mock blow by rolling out of the way and taunting, How's that for good English?
And you, the prize grammar student of ninth grade.
Heather drew herself into a dignified pose.
Miss Evans, have you not, I repeat, have you not been taught better than to use such phrasing?
Both girls collapsed laughing. If the other camps had raced by, family camp flew. Maybe because the girls knew it would be a few weeks until they'd see each other again, or because every activity was doubly appreciated when shared. Then on Thursday afternoon, something happened to wipe out the thought of camp separation and everything else. Roxy had finished her swimming and was home dressing for supper when a sharp knock came to the door.
Elder Evans, Mrs. Evans.
Yes, Missy. Roxy zipped her jeans and dashed into the living room. Missy stood leaning against the doorway, panting, white-faced.
What's wrong?
It's Kyle. Roxy felt her heart do an elevator drop to her bare toes. Missy caught her breath and hurried on. There's been an accident. The boys were climbing and he fell.
Where is he?
Fear was apparent in Ray Evans' voice. They're packing him in. He's unconscious. I don't know any more details. Her voice fell on deaf ears. Ray, Patrice and Roxy were already running across the grounds to where they could see a group of campers and staff had gathered at the edge of the woods. Halfway across, Patrice stopped. Roxy, go back and watch Ellen. There was something in her voice that killed the protest in Roxy's brain before it ever was said. I'll send Kevin to tell you what happened. Ellen was crying when Roxy got back. The loud voices must have startled her from her nap. She wailed. It was only when Roxy picked her up and rocked her that she settled down into an uneasy sleep and Roxy could put her back in her crib. Just as she was closing the door to the bedroom where Ellen slept, Kevin burst into the front door. His face was grimy with dirt and tears. His hands were scratched. He stared at Roxy for a few moments and then stumbled towards her.
I...
Shh, you'll wake Ellen. Roxy firmly caught him by the elbow and led him through the dining room into the kitchen. Now, what happened? Every trace of being grown up had been swept away by Kevin's fear. He huddled on the floor where he'd dropped in a heap and sobbed.
It was my fault. Kyle's going to die and it's all my fault.
Roxy shook him hard and glared at him.
Kevin, stop it. What happened?
She tried to suppress her own terror and shook him again. Kyle is not going to die. God won't let him. Deep inside, a little voice mocked, How do you know that? She ignored it and ordered again, Tell me what happened.
Kevin just shook harder, unable to control himself.
Roxy gave up trying to make him talk and caught him in her arms, holding him against her, letting him cry it out. What seemed a long time later, he stopped crying, sniffled a few times and mumbled, Thanks, when Roxy snatched a handful of tissues for him and pulled away from her.
Can you tell me now? She asked gently.
Yes, we went hiking with the group. Our leader told us to stay together, but I'd been over the trail a few days before, so I talked Kyle into going ahead with me. He blubbered convulsively. There's this narrow spot in the trail and you have to kind of jump over it. When we got there, I jumped across and hollered back, Come on, Kyle. He didn't want to. He said it didn't look safe. I told him not to be a chicken. He jumped and made it. But I didn't realize it when I landed. I had loosened the dirt, which was spongy underneath. The whole edge of the bank slid off and he went shooting down over the edge.
Then what?
Roxy couldn't believe that high-pitched voice was hers. Kevin's freckles stood out like etchings on his white face.
I tried to grab him and got hold of his shirt. Hang on, I told him, and he got hold of a little tree. The next minute it pulled loose.
Kevin swallowed hard as if he were having trouble breathing.
His shirt tore, and he buried his face in his hands and his shoulders heaved.
It was an accident.
Roxy had never pitied anyone as much as she pitied Kevin. Although she loved the twins, their love for each other was something special.
I shouldn't have gone ahead. I shouldn't have tried to get Kyle to do something he didn't want to, Kevin whispered. No, you shouldn't, but you can't undo that now. What we can do is pray about it and ask God to take care of Kyle.
You mean right now?
Hope spread faintly across his face.
Yes,
Roxy made up her mind in a hurry. She grabbed her brother's grimy hand. You first, or me?
He gripped her hand in a strong grip and managed to get out. I'm sorry, God. Please take care of Kyle and forgive me.
Roxy could hear him sniffling again, but she held his hand tightly. Thank you for your love for us all, God. Please take care of Kyle and let him be okay. Please help Kevin feel better. She took a deep breath, and please forgive us all, she stressed the words, for the mistake. When she opened her eyes, it was to find her brother staring at her.
I never knew you prayed like that, out loud I mean, except for table blessings.
I don't usually, she admitted, but we should. God likes us to talk to him about everything we do. The hurt little boy look came back to Kevin's eyes.
Do you really think Kyle will be all right?
Yes, I do. Before she could add anything more, Mother came in. We have to take Kyle to the nearest doctor. This would be a week we have only a nurse on duty and not a doctor. Her hair was mussed, her face strained. We'll probably be gone until late. Roxy, you stay with Ellen. Kevin, she gave him a measuring look. You,
may I go?
There was a world of longing on his streaked face. She hesitated for a moment and then looked him square in the eyes.
I want you to stay here with Roxy. You'll have to be man of the house while we're gone. Roxy will have enough to do with Ellen.
Roxy hadn't realized she'd been holding her breath until it came out with a little rush. Kevin's face turned white, disappointment mingled with pride. Suddenly, Roxy knew what Mum was doing. If he went with them to the hospital, he'd be pacing the floor waiting. By giving him responsibility here, he could concentrate on that instead of on Kyle. Heather appeared at the open door, then came in. Mom says I can stay with you if you like. She managed a smile, but her eyes were serious.
That's fine, Roxy told her. Mom's leaving Kevin as man of the house, so we'll be well protected.
She shot a warning glance at her friend.
Oh, good. I hate it when Dad's gone at night.
Heather slid easily into the situation. Kevin, instead of us eating at the dining hall tonight, if you'll show me where things are while Roxy takes care of Ellen, we can make a little dinner here instead of having to bundle up the baby. It looks like rain. Kevin jerked himself from the pool of misery he'd sunk back into.
Sure.
He turned pleading eyes on his mother. What did the nurse say? She thinks Kyle has a slight concussion in addition to a lot of bruises and scratches. The hiking leader checked for broken bones and there don't seem to be any, but Kyle needs x-rays to make sure there isn't a skull fracture.
Kevin's face turned even whiter. Does she think he might have that?
Dread lay under every word. She hopes not. Mom smiled through her worry. It's just best to make sure. She snatched a coat from the cupboard, a warm blanket and her purse. Get some sleep if you can. Remember, Kyle has a loving, heavenly father.
We prayed.
Kevin's hoarse voice stopped her halfway to the door. Me and Roxy prayed, and Roxy said Kyle was going to be okay. A beautiful light crossed Patrice Evans' face. I'm sure he is, son. She hugged Kevin and then Roxy, smiled at Heather and stepped outside and hurried to the car. It was the beginning of a hard and interminable evening. At first Heather and Roxy tried to talk and then play a table game and then put together a picture puzzle with Kevin, but he couldn't seem to get interested in anything. All three of them jumped nervously with every sound. It had begun to rain and the forces of nature seemed to have been unleashed. Rain poured, the wind moaned in the trees and distant thunder rumbled until Roxy thought it would drive her crazy. When the doorbell rang at 8:45, they stared at each other. Then all three ran to open it. Missy stood in the pouring rain, her dripping coat leaving puddles on the porch.
I won't come in, her quiet voice raised to be heard over the wild night. I just want you to know we had a special prayer circle at campfire tonight, and I feel sure,
she aimed the words at Kevin, I feel sure Kyle will be fine. The next instant she was splashing her way back to her cabin of girls. Cheered by the concern and the message, Roxy warmed milk
added spoonfuls of honey and asked Kevin if he wanted to go to bed. "I'd rather be with you." The three gradually lapsed into silence, watching the dying fire, unwilling to admit that they might have to wait a long time. The last ember was dying out before they heard the sound of a car stopping in front. Before anyone could get out of the car, the waiting group was at the door. Dad and Mom, looking exhausted, were coming up the steps with head bent against the driving rain. Kevin moaned and ran back into the living room, leaving the girls at the door. Kyle was not with them. Chapter 6. "Where is Kyle?" Roxy grabbed Mum's wet raincoat and clutched it to her body, paying no attention to the wetness oozing through the jeans and shirt to her skin. "He is all right." Kevin, standing in the background, gave an audible sigh of relief. "Why didn't he come with you?" Roxy demanded. "They wanted to keep him overnight to make absolutely sure he doesn't have any complications." She sank wearily into a chair. "The X-rays are all clear. Kyle was awake before we left." She smiled at Kevin, who had crept close and dropped to the rug by her chair. Her fingers strayed to his disheveled hair. "He said to tell you not to worry. He's going to be fine." Roxy felt as if she had come unglued. The strain, the worry, now the blessed relief combined to leave her weak. Kevin asked, "What are you going to do to me?" She leaned forward to blurt out he'd been punished enough and caught Dad's involuntary look. She bit her tongue and waited. "I think you have learned a lesson tonight." Dad's lined face cut Roxy to the heart. "Our camp prides itself on not having this kind of accident. That's why our rules are so strict. We want to make sure such things don't happen. You didn't obey your leader. Kyle could have been seriously injured. The doctor said it was a miracle he wasn't." Ray Evans' voice softened. "Now let's kneel for a word of prayer and get to bed. It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning, and your mother and I have to go back for Kyle in a few hours." "You shouldn't have come through the storm," said Roxy, but her father shook his head. "I didn't want to reassure you over the phone. I felt we were needed more here than at the hospital." Ray paused. "We all make mistakes and we have to pay for them, even if we are forgiven, as Kyle has forgiven Kevin." Heather and Roxy headed for bed as soon as the prayer was over. Heather's tired eyelids drooped as she said, "I think your dad is neat. He handled Kevin really good." She yawned. "He's right, too. We have to take the consequences of what we do." After the light was turned off, Roxy whispered, "Heather, are you awake?" "Not really," a giggle escaped. "What do you want?" Roxy stared into the darkness and kept her voice low, loud enough to make sure Heather heard her. "I was just thinking, what if I hadn't been here?" When Heather didn't answer, she added, "I know Mom could have found someone else to watch Ellen, but I believe Kevin really needed me tonight." The room was still silent. Roxy said, "Did you hear me, Heather?" Deep breathing was her only answer. "It doesn't matter," Roxy mumbled into her pillow, "but I know now what Missy meant when she said she really felt God directed her to camp last year." She yawned big. "Me too." Roxy noticed a new gentleness in Kevin in the next few days. He seemed more considerate, especially of Kyle when he returned home wearing an assortment of bandages and a big grin. Kevin followed him around, trying to do things for him, until his good-natured twin finally protested. "Lay off, Kevin. I'm not some kind of invalid or something. Stop treating me like you would Mum's big glass fruit bowl." Kevin desisted, but Roxy saw he seldom let Kyle out of his sight. Fortunately, a big event came along that diverted their minds from the near tragedy. The second horsemanship camp was going to stage a bigger-than-life rodeo with all kinds of riding. Roxy could participate in this. She had doggedly stuck to her swimming, but she had also found time to become thoroughly acquainted with horses. She loved the long rides, the pacing and working, and even caring for the gentle animals who nuzzled her pockets for carrots and sugar lumps. Along with the rodeo, they had a chuck wagon supper and a Western-style campfire. Missy had been selected to give one of the stories. She looked exceptionally attractive in her cowgirl outfit and had even learned to do a few rope-spinning tricks. Her eyes shone as she began her story. Roxy was seated close enough to see Missy's sparkle of joy over what she was doing and to thrill with every word on the clear evening air. I cannot vouch for the authenticity of this story, but it's supposed to have actually happened, Missy began. The campfire cast fantastic flickering shadows over her and the circle of campers and staff. My story is about three young men who started out one bright winter day to seek their fortune. They had prepared well. Their route led across a mountain. What they failed to anticipate was the intensity of winter storms and the distance across the mountain to their destination. Long before they made it to the other side, they were caught in a terrible blizzard. In spite of their predicament, they laughed and huddled together around their campfires, thinking they were secure. That night, the wind howled. When they awoke in the morning, they were dismayed to discover that the ledge on which they had stored their backpacks had broken away and taken their supplies with it. Now they were forced to face the seriousness of their situation. They were deep into a forest. To turn back was certain death. To go on was their only hope. Previously, they had heard that there was a hospice on the top of the mountain. If they could make it there, they would be safe. The monks would open their doors and take the strangers in. They would have food and warmth. The three began their slow climb up ever harder slopes. Missy paused and Roxy shivered. She could almost feel the cold wind biting into her as the story unfolded. A day passed. They built a fire with some matches that were not in their pack, melted snow and drank the water. Later, one of the men discovered that the matches were wet when he had slipped and fallen on the snowy incline. No matter how hard they tried, they could not get another fire going. The laughter faded from the men's faces and was replaced by fear. All night they lay stiff and sleepless in their sleeping bags, dreading what the new day would bring forth. Worse luck awaited them. Next day, one of the three slipped and hurt his leg badly. His friends bound it up, but he could not walk on it. White-faced but courageous, he called his companions and said, "I am done for. I can't go on. I want you to keep going and leave me here." "Never," his friends protested. "We will carry you. Surely we will find the hospice soon." But after travelling for several hours, his friends knew it was no use. It was all the uninjured men could do to drag themselves forward. They were weak from lack of food and chilled by the terrible fury of the blizzard. At last they sank in the snow. One of them finally said, "You are right. We cannot carry you. I will go on. If I find the hospice, I will send help. If not," he shrugged, "otherwise we will all die here." While the two men who remained behind watched, the one dragged himself to his feet and staggered off up the mountain, buffeted by the winds. His friends soon lost sight of him in the driving snow. "You go too," the injured man pleaded with the man who had stayed with him. The uninjured man, who was a Christian, replied resolutely, "No, Jesus would not leave one of his friends to die while he saved himself. I will help you as far as we can go. If we die, we will die together." He bound ropes around his friend and hoisted him to his back, wondering if he could ever take a step. Roxy swallowed hard and shot a glance at Kevin and Kyle. They were seated side by side. Even as she watched, they scooted closer together, and the smile between them was a beautiful promise. It was clear that the story meant something very special to them. Missy went on. It seemed 1,000 devils were loose on the mountain that night, as the faithful friend stepped out with a prayer on his lips. Every step was just that, one step. He couldn't think beyond that next step, but he kept going. Sometimes he fell and wished he could just close his eyes and rest, but he knew what would happen if he did, and he never gave in to the impulse. He knew that if he stopped and went to sleep, not only would he freeze to death, but his friend would also die. "Just a little more," he encouraged himself, "just a little way more. If there is a hospice, it can't be far away now." All night long he staggered and clawed his way through the snow. His friend hadn't spoken for hours. Perhaps he had frozen to death. An ironic thought crossed his mind. What if he was simply lugging a corpse? Jouncing his load, he heard a low moan and knew that his friend was still alive. Finally, he felt he could go no farther. But through his numb brain, a message hammered. Keep going or you'll die. He knew that this was true, for he had noticed that his efforts warmed his body and gave him the determination to continue. At last he became aware that it was getting lighter. He shouted to the murky sky where the day was dawning. Then the ground leveled off, and he realized he had reached the top of the mountain. Thank God, he gasped. He gazed ahead. A few hundred yards beyond stood the hospice. That was enough to give him the strength he needed to reach it. On his way, he stumbled over something. It was the frozen body of the third man. He had tried to save himself by traveling as light as he could and had perished. The extra weight borne by the other man not only saved him, but also his friend. There wasn't a sound as Missy finished her story. Even the campfire hushed its noisy crackle. Missy slowly drew out her Bible and turned to Luke 9:24. Whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. She flipped a few pages. Matthew 25:40. The king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Again she turned the pages, this time to John 15:12-13. This is my commandment, that ye love one another, as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Missy stepped back, and the camp pastor for that week came forward. His voice was gentle, and Roxy felt her eyes sting as he said, We have all been touched by this story, but the greatest story in the world is how Jesus gave his life to save us. He could have chosen to leave sinners to die in their sins. Instead, he died on the cross and rose again so we too may live. The dying campfire shone on the rims of his glasses as he said, Let us pray. Roxy thought she had never heard a more beautiful prayer. God the Father and Jesus seemed very close, almost as if they had come to campfire and were lingering on the edges of the group, waiting to be invited into hearts. She wasn't surprised when, after it was over and they had been asked to quietly leave without talking, Kevin and Kyle appeared, one on each side of her. She didn't say a word, she just put an arm around each of them, something they hadn't liked since they'd gotten more grown up the past few years. They didn't act like they minded now, they just accepted it, and the three of them walked down the trail towards the house together. Chapter 7. Conflict. Roxy climbed into her sleeping bag and turned her face to the wall. How different camp was when she was part of a cabin unit from when she participated but went to her own bedroom each night. Even though Missy and Heather were both in different cabins, she wouldn't have cared if Janice Ellsworth hadn't been assigned to the same cabin as Roxy. Roxy didn't know which was worse, being in a cabin unit with Janice or having Tess Huntington as a cabin mate. She suppressed an automatic groan. Visions of the first get-together flashed in her mind. Their counsellor, Suzanne, was an exceptional leader. She knew all the neat tricks of helping them to be an honour cabin. She had even found wildflowers and vines and used an open Bible on a table in the centre of the room for a worship centre, with a candle which she lighted when they had worship for special closeness. Roxy stifled another groan. Fat chance with Tess in their unit. No honours for them. The defiant 14-year-old had stuck out her lower lip when Suzanne explained what was required and had muttered, Kid stuff. But not loud enough for the counsellor to hear. Afterwards, Roxy had tried to be friendly, but Tess just stared at her with dark eyes and didn't respond. And Janice. Good old Royal Mountie Janice trying to get her man, Jeff. Some of the irritation left Roxy's face as she remembered how Jeff had taken time from moving into his cabin to find her and tell her how great it was to be there. It's your first camp, isn't it? He asked, then flashed white teeth and added, I mean your first up with teens camp. I know you've been out here all summer, lucky girl.
Yes, she smiled at the tall boy and on an impulse confessed, I wasn't too sure how lucky I was when I found out we'd be here all summer.
Now she stopped and looked across the shiny lake to the gently waving trees on the other side. I even hate to think about summer ending.
Don't forget our youth group has all kinds of things planned for the autumn, he reminded.
Before she could answer, Janice piped in with, Yes, isn't it wonderful?
She gazed at Jeff as if it were a cream pie and a chocolate ice cream all rolled into one.
Jeff and I have been working with planning committee and we've got some terrific ideas.
Her tone definitely set them apart as a closed corporation. Roxy felt like a total outsider, and her heart dropped like a rock thrown into Tillicum Lake. Even Jeff's warm, See you later, Roxy, couldn't lift her spirits. What chance did she have of ever getting to know Jeff better with a leech like Janice hanging round all the time?
A few hours later, Roxy lost her temper. She rounded the cabin, and Janice was telling one of the girls from their cabin unit, We really need to pray for Tess. She licked her lips.
Roxy thought of a sleek cat with cream dripping from her whiskers. She's an abused child, you know. We're really not supposed to know anything about it, but one of the counsellors paid her way.
That's enough, Janice.
Roxy felt her face flame with anger. Whatever Tess is, she's here and part of our cabin group. Your talk about praying for her is just an excuse to gossip. Lay off.
She glared.
Well, really, Miss Preacher, are you trying to take your dad's place? Janice's eyes shot sparks of anger.
I'm just telling you to lay off Tess. If she really has been abused and someone cared enough about her to bring her to camp, the last thing she needs is some big mouth like you spreading her private business all over camp.
Roxy was furious and every word showed it. She came expecting to find Christians here. Let's make sure that's what she finds, not a bunch of vicious gossips.
I suppose you are going to be her friend, Janice smirked. I can just see you walking off from everybody else to be with Tess.
I'd rather be with Tess 100 times than with some people I know.
Roxy bit her lip to keep from blurting out something worse.
You, Janice couldn't get any words from her constricted throat. Just lay off, I mean it. If I have to, I'll report you to Suzanne.
I always figured you for a squealer, Janice exploded.
Trying to make camp a better place for all of us isn't squealing, Roxy told her. I mean what I say.
Thanks.
That single word spun all three girls around to the direction of the sound. Tess Huntington stood a few feet away. Her face was pale and she had obviously heard everything they'd said. Her dull eyes glanced at Roxy, then at Janice. Her lip twisted and Roxy saw her pulling down one sleeve, maybe to hide the large bruise on her arm.
After hearing you, now I know why people think Christians are hypocrites.
She brushed past them, stepped inside the cabin and slammed the door. 2 days later, Roxy was still trying to talk to Tess, but it was no use. Finally, in the afternoon of the second day, Roxy faced her in exasperation.
Look, Tess, don't judge the whole camp by Janice. Open your eyes and you'll see she isn't all that well-liked.
Yeah, had been Tess's only answer, but her attitude didn't change. That night, Roxy tossed restlessly. What if she were Tess?
I couldn't be, she told herself. My parents would never abuse me.
But Tess couldn't choose her parents. These last 6 words rang in Roxy's ears as clearly as if they'd been spoken aloud.
Section 3.
Roxy remembered how Tess refused to go swimming and raced back from campfire and was ready already in her pyjamas before her cabin mates got there. She always made sure that she was last out for getting ready in the morning too. Roxy shuddered. Did the bruises on her arms match other hidden bruises the younger girl was ashamed of? It bothered Roxy so much she sought out Suzanne the next day. Can you tell me about Tess? She caught Suzanne's instant mask. It's not just curiosity. One of the girls gave away that she had been abused. I just thought if I knew a little more I could find a way to reach her.
Her voice trailed off. Suzanne automatically checked both ways to see they were out of hearing distance of any others. She's had it rough, and it made her grow a protective shell. She's been hurt a lot, and so she's scared to trust anyone. Her mother, who should have protected her, has physically abused her. But when the authorities stepped in, Tess lied and refused to admit that the bruises were from anything except her own clumsiness.
"How can anyone do such a thing?" Roxy exclaimed. "It's wicked. I've heard a lot about child abuse, but I never knew anyone who actually had to live under such conditions. Can't anything be done about it?"
"In a general way, a great deal is being done about it, Roxy," Suzanne said. "Various organisations are making people aware. Neighbours are encouraged to work together and not only report any suspected case of abuse, but volunteer to work with the family. Remember, even though people like Tess's mother do bad things, they are still God's children. When such people come to know Jesus, they stop being abusive."
"What happens until then?" Roxy wanted to know.
"We do everything we can to help. Many people with this problem are getting professional counselling from ministers and certain organisations. People who abuse others usually were abused themselves as children."
"After camp," Roxy faltered and her lips trembled, "Tess will go back home to..."
"She's one of the lucky ones," Suzanne said quietly. "Her mother is in a program right now, and I believe Tess will find a different home situation when she goes back." Suzanne sighed. "Now, if we can only see that she has a good camp experience..." She broke off. Her eyes travelled across the grounds. "That's why we're here. Love and caring are the strongest forces there are for changing people for the better," Suzanne commended. "Let's see if we can't apply these principles to crack the mask Tess has been forced to wear to cover up her real feelings." Roxy accepted the challenge. It wasn't easy. Tess resisted every effort to make her a part of the group. She did what she absolutely had to in the way of chores and group activities, but no more. Roxy kept on trying. Every time their group went to a meal or gathered for campfire and services, she sat by Tess. Sometimes she talked. More often she just smiled. The first positive response came one evening when Roxy was late for campfire. She was running to catch up with the others in her group. Tess was dragging her feet behind the rest. Roxy slowed to a walk when she overtook Tess. Was that a look of relief Roxy saw in the dark watching eyes when she panted, "Thanks for waiting for me"? The next day, Roxy almost blew everything. During a little free time, she flopped down next to Heather and spent a few minutes joking and laughing. Then she caught sight of Tess. Tess stood a little way away with strange expression on her face. The sullenness that had lifted a bit in the past few hours was back, but with something more. "What's wrong with Tess?" Roxy whispered. Heather gave Tess a long look before answering and then said, "I think she's jealous." She ignored Roxy's gasp. "She was beginning to cling to you in little ways. Now she sees you with me. Maybe to her it means you don't care about her after all." "See you later, Heather." Roxy was off and running, but Tess was too fast for her. It took her the rest of free time to discover Tess hiding place by a big rock near the lake. When she quietly said, "Hi, what's with you?" Tess turned on her. "Why should you care? Just go back to your friend and leave me alone." The harshness of her words seemed to be softened by the tears on her set face. "I have more than one friend, Tess." Roxy sat on the rock and waited. When Tess didn't answer, she went on, "Heather isn't even my best friend." "How come?" The dark eyes pinned Roxy to the rock. "Jesus is my very best friend. Heather is only one of my best earthly friends." Did the girl understand? Roxy tried again. "Jesus died so we could live. He can be your best friend too if you let him. He loves you and..." "Sure, that's why I..." Tess snapped her lips shut tight. "That's why your mom is getting help for her problem." You believe your mom loves you, don't you? A sniffle and a nod came from Tess. God and Jesus also love you. You've been hearing about them this week. Suddenly Roxy knew what was so clear to her was a mystery to the unfortunate Tess. She took a deep breath. Tess, please look at me. Slowly the tangled head came up and the dark eyes fixed on her. I know they love you because they love me. We are all brothers and sisters in God's eyes, so I love you. Roxy knew it was true. She had grown to really care about Tess and her problems. Some of the anger, hurt and jealousy faded from Tess's face. Roxy could almost see words trembling on her lips that would break her out of her shell. She finally said, "Ugh, we better get back." Disappointment swept over Roxy. She had been so close. A new thought stopped her disappointment. Maybe this was how Jesus felt when he couldn't quite break through to those he cared about. Another question came back to Roxy again and again during the next days. It was an insistent, nagging thought. What about Jesus being disappointed over those who had accepted him? What about the feeling she had against Janice? She started it, Roxy whispered fiercely to herself. It didn't help. Since their quarrel, the two had stayed as far apart as living together in the same cabin group permitted. Janice tossed her head to one side every time she saw Roxy with Jeff for a minute. Roxy would grit her teeth whenever Janice took part in activities, and at other times, however, Roxy acted as if she were the best Christian who ever walked the grounds. A struggle was raging within her. The only thing that seemed to make her feel better was that, ever so slowly, Tess was beginning to accept the love others at the camp showed her. Little things like rare smiles, a conscientious effort to do more than her share, even speaking first, loomed large to Roxy and Suzanne. What would be nothing to us is a giant step for Tess, Suzanne confided in a low tone to Roxy late Friday afternoon. Your willingness to be an example has done a great deal. Roxy felt her face get hot and red. She turned away. If Suzanne knew how much she detested Janice, she wouldn't feel she was such a good example. And if Tess could see how churned up inside she felt... Roxy couldn't finish the thought. What was she going to do? It was almost time for Sabbath to begin, time to worship God and to be at peace. It was a time when Roxy hoped Tess would be touched by the Holy Spirit and open up. Yet how could she help one girl when she was so filled with dislike for another, one of her own cabin mates? Chapter 8. After Campfire Hike. Roxy couldn't remember ever feeling so miserable as during that special campfire that evening. Suzanne's praise of her as being a good example had been like a mirror, and Roxy didn't like what she saw. "It isn't my fault," she muttered to herself so low that even Tess couldn't hear her. Roxy's face burned. "Janice is a hypocrite," her mind protested. "What about you?" an inner voice demanded. It grew more insistent. "Tess thinks you're the moon and stars and sun all squashed into one. What if she realized how terribly you detest Janice?" Roxy's lips suddenly went dry. Practically the whole camp knew that she and Janice didn't get along. Janice had seen to that. "Stop it," she told herself sharply. "Forget what Janice has done and take another look at yourself. So Janice is silly. So are Karen and Donna. You don't let them get to you. So Janice is boy crazy. So are Paula and Betty. So Janice is a phony. Don't you ever put on something you don't feel?" Hot waves flooded through her. How nice had she been about being dragged to Tillicum Lake for the summer? She pouted and made her folks unhappy. Roxy heard little of the closing story, just enough to know that it was an inspiring tale and that Tess listened closely. Roxy did catch the end of it, and a lump came to her throat when she saw something silver sparkling on Tess's lashes.
but it didn't solve her own problem. It did make her look at Tess with new eyes. If Tess could forgive her mother for the things she had done, shouldn't Roxy, who was supposed to be a Christian, forgive a fellow camper for such minor irritations as Janice had caused? Her lungs held the air in them until she realized she had been holding her breath and let it out with a suppressed hiss. She knew what she had to do. It wasn't going to be easy, but she had to do it. As soon as the campfire was over, she took 3 deep breaths, held them, and then slowly let them out. She had learned in drama that it was a good way to get rid of nervousness before doing a hard thing. Janice was ahead, giggling with some of her cabin mates. "Janice, can I see you for a second?" Roxy's voice sounded funny. She could see Janice's shoulders stiffen, and through the shadows her eyes got suspicious-looking. "What do you want?" Why didn't the other girls take the hint and get lost? Tess hovered in the background, but Donna and Betty didn't move an inch. Great. Now she had to talk with Janice in front of a congregation. Should she ask them to move on? Roxy silently shook her head, and then she said in a low voice, "I want to apologize for the way I've been acting towards you." Why did her almost whisper sound like a scream in the night air? "You apologizing to me?" Janice was frankly incredulous. "Are you putting me on?" "No." 1,000 ways to make Janice take some of the blame pranced through Roxy's brain, but she bravely rejected them. It wasn't up to her to point out Janice's hang-ups in order to excuse her own unchristian behavior. "I just don't like having bad feelings towards anyone." She gulped, realizing how true her statement was. "Even if we aren't best friends or anything like that." "You're right about that," Janice put in, and Donna laughed. It was getting harder instead of easier, but Roxy simply could not face another time of being miserable like she'd just gone through. "Whatever. Anyway, I'm apologizing, and I guess that's about all." She spun around, then walked off, leaving the 3 staring after her. She could feel their eyes boring into her wind cheater. "Wow." Tess ran to catch up with her. "How come you apologize to her? She's a pain." Roxy heard the admiration beneath the question. She stopped in the path and looked at Tess in the starlight. "I hate feeling mad at anyone." "I don't get it. She's the one who's been acting so rotten." Tess grinned at Roxy's involuntary jerk. "I get around and hear things. How come it's you who has to try to make things change?" The moment with Tess that Roxy had prayed for had come. Was she ready for it? She chose her words carefully. "I guess I just realized you were right when you said Christians are sometimes hypocrites. You know the bumper sticker that says Christians aren't perfect, just forgiven?" "Yeah." "Well, if we want Jesus to forgive us, we have to forgive others and ourselves." "So you aren't so bad?" Tess sprang to Roxy's defense. "We're all sinners, Tess. That's why Jesus came and died for us." "You trying to be a preacher?" Tess almost sounded more suspicious than Janice had looked earlier. "No." Roxy could feel a strange sensation going through her. "I guess I just want you to know how I feel." "Like how do you feel?" Tess probed. "Great. Even if Janice doesn't accept my apology, I feel great about being able to admit I was wrong." "Sure." There were reservations in Tess's voice, but Roxy grinned and said, "It's too deep for me too, but I really do feel better." She continued to feel that way the rest of Up With Teens camp. She couldn't decide who watched her more closely, Tess or Janice. She noticed the puzzled looks on both faces, but just smiled. She had tried to make things right. Now all she could do was wait and see what happened. Just before the end of that Sabbath, Suzanne gathered her cabin group around her and announced, "How would you like a special treat? We've received permission to take a moonlight hike after campfire." "I didn't know we could do that," Janice said. "I thought we had to go by the schedule."
I got special permission and have a special reason, Suzanne told her. Get into warm jackets and hiking shoes or boots. We'll leave right after campfire. She eyed the sky carefully. There are clouds coming up, but they shouldn't interfere. The weatherman is predicting they won't dump rain until midnight, and we'll be back a long time before then. Do you have something to show us? Donna wanted to know, and the other girls chorused, What is it? Suzanne smiled mysteriously. Just be ready to go when it's time. A little later they were all there, Roxy, Tess, Janice, Donna, Karen, Paula, Betty, Suzanne. Roxy could feel Tess shivering with excitement. She whispered, Bet you've never been on anything like this. Uh-huh. In my neighbourhood you stay in after dark. Tess turned dark eyes towards Roxy. May I walk next to you? Sure, we may see a deer or something. Got your flashlight? Tess held it up in reply. One thing, girls, Suzanne cautioned, we got permission only because we promised to be very quiet, both leaving and returning. We can't disturb the other campers. It's like being in a spy adventure, Janice whispered. She seemed to have lost some of her arrogance in the thrill of their hike. The little band silently crept out of earshot of camp before speaking. Even when they did talk, it was low. The night was fantastic. In the distance, the white mountain peaks rose against a mottled sky. Stars pierced the dark expanse above the racing clouds. Suzanne hesitated a little way out of camp and surveyed the sky. I don't know. Maybe we'd better call it off. Those clouds look pretty determined. Oh, Suzanne! Cries of disappointment rose. How much further are we going? About another mile and a half. We can make it. Sure we can. Well, okay, but we'll have to hurry. Suzanne led the way into a little valley and then began to climb a path worn into the needle-covered ground. By the time they reached the summit, they were all panting. Suzanne stopped them with her hand. Listen. Roxy and Tess stood a little apart. Suddenly a frightened hand grabbed Roxy's arm. What's that? A chorus of barking filled the air. Coyotes. They bark like that. Roxy was proud of her newly acquired knowledge. Kyle had told her the same thing the first time she'd heard them. Be very quiet, Suzanne cautioned. Then she led them down an incline. She stopped about 100 feet down by a shining stream, merrily chasing itself down a gorge. Look. There in the half moonlight stood several animals. When I signal, everyone turn her flashlight on, Suzanne directed in a low tone. Ready? Roxy felt her heart pound as she poised her finger on her flashlight switch. Now! 9 flashlights shot across the clearing. For a single instant, the herd of graceful deer stood immobile, fascinated by the light. Then, with the leaps of skillful ballet dancers, they rose in the air and were gone, crashing through the brush across the stream and disappearing. That's all for tonight, Suzanne smiled. I found out they drink here and wanted to show you. We'd better get back now. She shone her flashlight on her watch. Good, we can be back and safe in bed in about 45 minutes at the most. A big drop of rain spattered the ground. Good thing, too, the weatherman must have been wrong. Roxy could hear the anxious note in her voice. A bright idea struck her. Suzanne, there's a short cut from up here that will save us at least 30 miles. We can take it and maybe beat that storm. Are you sure? Suzanne questioned. Positive. We follow the stream to the first big turn and then take a right. We circle around and come back into camp near the Indian village. Well, Suzanne looked around the circle, shall we try it? Clouds were boiling up now and other giant raindrops hit the girls. The wind had risen and the trees moaned. I'm for anything that will get us back quicker, Janice approved, and then added, what seemed to Roxy almost reluctantly, Roxy ought to know if there's a short cut. She's been up here all summer. Tess glanced at her sharply, and Roxy wondered if the grudging admiration in Janice's voice had been evident to the others. Lead on, Daniel Boone, someone called, and they all laughed as Roxy shone her light down the path. The shortcut trail was overgrown and hard going. By the time they reached the turn, the storm was more menacing than ever. Although not too much rain had fallen, the night had become pitch dark. Roxy paused at the trail entrance and shone her light ahead. Two dimly trod trails led off, one to the right in a sharp turn and the other a more gentle right. Which one did they take? The sharp right was better defined, but the other seemed to circle more in the direction of the camp. This one. She headed down the less travelled trail. Evidently no one had been over it recently. She had to bend back brush and vines. After about a quarter mile of struggling, it melted into nothingness. "I'm sorry," she told Suzanne in a small voice. "I guess we should have taken the sharp right." "It's all right. We haven't lost any more time than we'll make up on the way back," Suzanne reassured them. This time she led back towards the other fork in the trail. But just before they reached it, there was a loud groan. Roxy whirled around. Tess lay sprawled in the trail.
"Tess, what happened?" I guess I tripped over a blackberry vine."
Tess sat up and rubbed her ankle.
"I'm okay."
She slowly got up, took a step and crumpled.
"Ow, it hurts to walk."
Roxy caught her as she fell and eased her to the ground. Suzanne was already beside her with her flashlight, pulling up her pants leg, feeling her right ankle. "Can you move it?" Tess wiggled it and responded to Suzanne's prodding.
"Yes, but it sure hurts."
"It's already starting to swell." Suzanne jerked the scarf from around her neck and bound it tightly around the ankle. "Maybe this will help."
"What are we going to do?"
Tess quavered, all traces of her tough shell gone in the terrors of the unfamiliar dark night. Suzanne looked at the circle of girls standing with their flashlights on. "What we aren't going to do is to try to make it back to camp. We also aren't going to split up. There's no way we can carry Tess or have her hobble along in this growing storm."
"You mean we have to stay out here?"
Janice's voice rose to a high pitch of fear. Roxy felt sick in the pit of her stomach when Suzanne answered quietly, "We have no choice." "Someone, maybe Donna," muttered, "they'll come after us when we're missed." Suzanne shook her head. "No, remember we are to go back without noise so as not to disturb anyone." Her laugh sounded gallant but weak. "Well, girls, it's the pioneer spirit for us tonight. I shouldn't have brought you." The regret in her words was too much for Roxy.
"It isn't your fault," she cried. "If I hadn't suggested the short cut..."
She couldn't go on. Before long, the wind swooped down the trail where they were huddled, and anything else they might have said was lost in the roar. Roxy's heart was darker than the night and more churned up than the quivering leaves in a nearby cottonwood. A long, fearful night lay before them, and she was to blame. Chapter 9. Unexpected Adventure. The wind died down a bit, and Roxy couldn't help crying out, "Go ahead and say it." She faced a circle of stranded girls. "It's all my fault." "And?" "So, we all make mistakes." That couldn't be Janice's voice, could it? Roxy tried to peer past the flashlight. It was Janice. A suddenly softer Janice who added, "Anyone who's got the courage to admit she's wrong can't be all bad." Roxy about dropped through the ground. But Janice wasn't through. "Suzanne," she said, "we can get a lot more comfortable by finding the biggest, thickest fir tree around and crawling under the branches next to the trunk. We learned that last year in survival. We can huddle together and save body warmth, and the interwoven branches will keep off rain unless it absolutely pours." Roxy gasped. Who'd have thought Janice would know anything about survival? Would wonders never cease? "Hey, Janice, you're pretty smart," Suzanne complimented when they carefully moved Tess under the large fir and gathered around her. "Think nothing of it," she started with all her old arrogance, then broke off sheepishly. "To tell the truth, I didn't know much about survival until I came to camp last year." Her laugh was the most natural Roxy had ever heard out of her. "It's really kind of cozy in here," Tess muttered. She shifted on the needle-strewn ground. once you get the rocks out from under you.
We'd better save our flashlights in case we need them, Suzanne cautioned. 8 beams instantly went out, leaving it blacker than the inside of a well-used chimney.
Wow, it's really pitch black in here, and I do mean pitch.
Roxy rubbed her sticky fingers together where she touched the sap of the tree.
That's a terrible pun, Donna groaned and then giggled. It started a round of laughing that took their minds off their plight for a few minutes.
Well, what should we do now? Roxy asked. I don't think we'll sleep too much with all this going on. She cocked her head and listened to the wind howling through the forest.
We could tell ghost stories, Suzanne suggested with another laugh.
Roxy felt Tess shiver against her arm where she lay.
Forget it, it's ghostly enough without that.
I know, let's sing.
Before we do, let's have a friendship circle, Suzanne quietly put in. Anyone who doesn't care to offer a prayer can squeeze the hand of the person next to her as a sign to go on.
She bowed her head and offered a simple but beautiful prayer, asking God to be with them through the night. The other girls followed.
Tess was next to the last and Roxy last. Roxy held her breath as the strong fingers gripped hers in a hard grip. When it came to Tess, she swallowed hard, started to say something, then squeezed Roxy's hand until it hurt. Roxy fought disappointment. She had been sure Tess would pray. She hesitated, then added her own thanks to God for them finding shelter. She asked his continual care and then added, "And please, God, help Tess's ankle to get better soon. In Jesus' name, Amen."
Tess's fingers clung to hers as if unwilling to let go. For a little while, no one said anything. Then Tess said in a defiant voice, almost like the one she had when she first came to camp,
"I'm glad we got caught out here."
"What? You're kidding. For heaven's sake, why?"
Tess answered very simply, "Because now I feel really part of our cabin group. When Suzanne said you all had to stay out here because of me, not one of you griped or put me down."
Her breathing quickened and Roxy knew she was struggling for words.
"I never heard anyone pray for me before."
At the lonely sound in the injured girl's voice, Roxy groped in the darkness until she found the little hand again and squeezed it. Tess went on, "If it was light, I couldn't say all this, but in the dark and everything, I just want you to know I really..." She stopped and evidently couldn't quite get it out. "I like you all and want to say thanks." Something warm splashed onto Roxy's hand, but she didn't comment. She could feel Tess still wasn't through. "Roxy said Jesus and God loved me. I couldn't buy it. Now..." She waited for a long time and finished with, "Maybe she's right after all." At first, Roxy experienced a keen sense of waiting for more, but realized at last that Tess was through. Then she remembered how Suzanne had said the slightest thing was a big step for Tess. Her heart lifted. This was the breakthrough she'd prayed for. The crack in the shell would widen if... "As long as we're having a confession time, I just want to say I'm sorry, Tess." Janice's voice choked out of the blackness. "Out here together, I guess we start thinking about what's really important. I'm glad we got to be in the same cabin." She stopped. "That goes for every one of you." The tight band of wondering whether Janice had accepted her apology broke within Roxy. Janice might never be able to come right out and admit that she had been to blame as much or more than Roxy. It didn't matter. Roxy knew each person present understood exactly what Janice meant.
Section 4.
It was a night to be remembered. Roxy was thankful for the heavy jackets and shoes they wore. Janice had been right. Even the night wind couldn't penetrate the tree cover that sheltered them under its branches. Other than being a little cramped, they weren't uncomfortable. While the wind increased, they could hear the soft rain patter. It never rained hard enough to reach them. They stayed snug and dry in the arms of the forest giant. Several times the girls stood as best they could and stretched cramped muscles.
Once Janice whispered to Roxy, "I'm glad the wind is still up. It keeps us from hearing all the little night forest sounds. In a storm, the animals lie low. The girls would be scared to death if it were still and there were all kinds of rustling and footsteps to hear."
"Me too," Roxy whispered back, surprised Janice would single her out to confide in. "Aren't you scared at all?"
"I was, kind of, until we prayed."
Janice slipped back to her place, leaving Roxy wondering. Toward morning, most of them fell into a restless sleep. The last hours before dawn were the hardest. Roxy woke with Tessa's elbow in her ribs and shivering. Her body temperature had lowered while she was asleep, and now she was cold for the first time. "Wake up, girls," Suzanne shook each in turn. Hair tumbled, eyes filled with sleep, they sat up. "The wind has died down and it should be light in about half an hour." She peered out between the overhanging branches that drooped nearly to the ground. "Look, huge stars." All except Tess scrambled after Suzanne, glad to stretch. Roxy did a series of touching her toes calisthenics until she tingled, then slipped her coat off and covered Tess, who lay quietly on the ground. Her face showed how badly her ankle hurt, even in the starlight, but she just smiled. "Boy, Tess," Betty told her bluntly, "if I were the one down there, I'd be hollering my head off." Roxy's eyes filled with tears, and she turned away, thinking this wasn't the first time Tess had been hurt. She had learned to hide her pain, but things were going to be better for her. Regretting the past didn't help. Gradually it lightened until the world turned pale grey, then streaked with rose from the almost-up sun. Suzanne announced their plans. "Some of us will go back immediately and get men with a stretcher." She paused and looked around the circle of solemn girls. "Who wants to stay with Tess?"
"Me,"
Roxy raised her hand automatically. "I do too," Janice added. The other girls showed signs of willingness, but Suzanne shook her head. "The rest of you come with me. No point in any more of you staying." She swung around and faced the three. They had pulled Tess out from under the branches after finding some dead ones that were fairly dry and arranging them into a bed for her. "Maybe I should just send the girls and stay myself." Doubt filled Suzanne's worried face. "You better go with them," Janice said. "We came over the trail last night in the dark," and her eyes laughed so Roxy couldn't take offense. "Let's don't get off any more trails and lose someone else." Everyone laughed, and a few moments later, Suzanne and the others disappeared around a bend in the trail. By the time Janice and Tess and Roxy ran out of things to talk about and fell silent, the sun had peeked over the hill and shone down on them. Even its early morning warmth felt good. From their vantage position, they watched the forest come to life. Upstream, they could hear a pair of beavers busily gnawing away, building their winter home. Directly across from them, three deer came down to drink. Squirrels scolded them, and chipmunks chattered saucily. "It's almost worth being hurt to see all this," Tess said in an awed voice. "I wish everyone could come here sometime." "You're the best sport in the whole world," Roxy burst out, and Janice nodded. Tess's face rivaled the rising sun in its rosiness at the compliment. "I wonder what camp will think when they find out that we spent last night curled up under a tree," Janice questioned. She flashed a glance at Roxy and Tess. "Do I look as messy as you two?"
"Worse," Roxy told her solemnly. "Our hair is shorter, and so we have only 1,000 sticks and needles even after running a comb through it. You probably have 2,000.
"Great." Janice lifted her heavy hair and twisted it on top of her head, fastening it with a clip she found in her pocket. "Is that better?" She didn't wait for an answer, but added with a mock wicked gleam in her eyes, "You know who will probably be first up the trail to rescue us, don't you?" Roxy's face flushed at the obvious answer, but substituted, "Heather, of course." "Then how come you're trying to get yourself back together?" Janice insisted, although there was none of her usual malice, just friendly rivalry. "Heather likes to see me look good." Roxy continued to fuss with her hair and brush her clothes. "Who else?"
Janice put on an air of innocence and rolled her eyes. I just thought maybe Jeff might happen along. She dropped her pose and met Roxy's eyes steadily. Just because we've called off our feud doesn't mean I'm not going to try to keep Jeff as a special friend. Her bluntness brought a shocked expression to Tessa's face and a gasp from Roxy. When Roxy recovered a bit, she just grinned. May the best girl win. Thanks, I will, Jenna said. But she laughed when she put one hand behind her and the other on one hip like a model posturing before a camera, and the other two couldn't help joining her. Both girls were wrong about who the first rescuer would be. Jeff and Heather tied for third. Kevin and Kyle were first and second down the trail.
Boy!
Kevin's face was filled with envy, his blue eyes with admiration. Were you ever lucky getting to stay out all night and in a storm at that? How come you're not wet? Kyle, the more sensitive twin, asked. Roxy hesitated. Even with her new feelings about Janice, she hated to admit in front of Jeff and Heather how resourceful the other girl had been. But it was only fair. Her honest eyes raised a warning look at Heather before she answered, Janice knew what to do. She had us take cover next to the trunk of the biggest fir tree we could find. The branches came down and kept out the rain. She noticed the pleased look Jeff gave Janice, and her spirit drooped. Suddenly all the fear and turmoil of the night before caught up with her. She wanted nothing more than to get back to camp and hit the sack. So how come you had to make her out the great heroine? Heather prodded after Tess had been loaded onto the stretcher and they were on their way back to camp via the shortcut Roxy had missed the night before. She deserved it. She apologized to Tess and did everything she could to make the night bearable for all of us. Roxy turned her head to keep even Heather from seeing the depression she knew was showing on her face. If Jeff wants to date her, that's his choice. Where's your fighting spirit? Heather demanded, eyes flashing. I guess it's done up and died, Roxy said. It was my fault we started the wrong way and Tess got hurt. The whole camp, including Jeff, will think I'm dumb when they find out. Too tired to even care, she added. Just get me to bed. I've had it. I don't want to talk to anybody for about a week. Chapter 10. Now I don't want to leave. Roxy didn't get her wish to sleep for a week, or even an hour. Neither did her cabin mates. With only a few hours left of Up With Teens camp, none of them were willing to waste them sleeping, especially when the camp was so excited about the girls' unexpected adventure. Can't believe everyone isn't blaming me, Roxy told Heather. I was sure someone would tell how I got on the wrong trail. Everyone's too glad to have you all back safe to worry over why you got caught out, Heather had told her. When Suzanne and the others got back and we found out what had happened, the whole camp exploded into action. Before Roxy could reply, the camp nurse came into the cabin where the girls were dressing after hot showers, which, as Janice said, makes us feel alive again. The nurse smiled at the girls. Roxy, Tess is fine. We've strapped her ankle. She wants to see you. I feel like an old lady, Roxy grunted as she bent to tie her shoe and then hobbled after the nurse. I didn't know I had muscles in so many strange places until every one of them started aching. She slowly followed the nurse to the first aid cabin. Hey, Tess, how's it going? A lot better. Tess lay propped up against pillows. Her dark eyes shone, but not with fever. Guess what? Suzanne says if my ankle is better in a few weeks and if Mum will let me, I can come back for the backpacking camp. You're going on it, aren't you? I hadn't thought much about it, Roxy said, mind whirling, but if you do, I will too. Good. Tess's smile spread over her face, and Roxy noticed for the first time how pretty Tess looked when her sullen expression was erased. You know, we get to go into the mountain meadows and everything. Maybe some of the others will come back too. You have to be 14, you know. She sighed with relief. I'm glad I'm old enough. Roxy's brain clicked like a busy computer. Would Jeff be going? How about Janice? Heather wouldn't, she knew that. Heather didn't specially enjoy primitive condition type stuff. Roxy felt a secret thrill. Last night's adventure had really shown her what it was like to be in the woods. Backpacking would be neat. The thought helped her tell her friends goodbye later that day when camp broke up. The worst part is saying goodbye, she told Heather. We share experiences and then don't know when or if we'll ever see some of the kids again.
I know. Heather was unusually solemn. You know that poem that talks about ships passing in the night or something like that? Some of these kids are like that. Her serious eyes scanned the laughing groups already loading gear for the trip home. The ones who don't come back and who don't know Christ. She hesitated, then said, I just hope they get enough from camp to make a difference.
How could they help it?
Roxy didn't realize that Janice was behind them until she spoke. Janice looked straight at Heather and then turned to Roxy. Look at the difference camp makes even with those of us who do know Christ. How can the others keep from being changed? A warm rush of feeling swept over Roxy and she smiled at Janice. They might never be great friends, but at least they had revised their opinions of each other under the influence of that Holy Spirit, and it would make a difference in working together at home. Will you be at backpacking camp? Some inner honesty prompted her to add generously, Jeff says he's coming. Now why had she said that? She asked herself. Going a second mile was one thing. Running a marathon, trying to be fair, was something else.
Will you?
Yeah. Roxy couldn't keep back the excitement. After Tess got all excited about it and I found out what it was like, nothing could keep me from it. I'd really like to, Janice admitted, but my folks said something about making a family vacation and I'm not sure of the dates. Mischief sparkled in her eyes. I doubt they will change their plans so I can follow Jeff around. Heather's mouth dropped and she blurted out, No what? You're a kind of neat person when you aren't so busy. Her face turned bright red and she bit her lip. Janice glared for a minute and then laughed. Go ahead and say it. I agree. The mischief returned to her face. Don't think I'm changing what I want. I just intend to go about getting it in a, shall we say, more acceptable way.
Well,
Roxy was first to recover after Janice grinned at both of them and jauntily walked off across the grounds with a see you later. At least she's honest. You have to give her credit for that. Heather was still staring after the retreating figure. Who says leopards can't change their spots? Or at least paint them a different colour. She really isn't so bad after all, Roxy said. Her blue eyes lighted up with a crinkly smile. I guess we all have our moments. She dropped the subject of Janice and teased, Sure you won't come back to backpack camp? With bugs and all sorts of crawly things? Heather twisted her face into a scowl and shivered. Can you see me fighting off mosquitoes like fighter planes and shaking spiders out of my sleeping bag? Roxy laughed at the picture but stood her ground. It will be too high for most of the creepy crawlies. Come on, go with me. We're hiking into a mountain lake that has a year-round glacier. It's going to be really intergenerational. Our group is going to include a man and a woman who are over 70, I understand. Granny and Uncle Ned, as everyone calls them, have hiked and backpacked all their lives and don't plan to stop now. We're going to camp right by the glacier lake and swim. In a glacier lake? Heather delicately drew her arms around her. You'll freeze. And cook all our own meals. Roxy went right on as if there'd been no interruption. We'll have campfires and be where there aren't any groups except our own. You make it sound pretty great. Heather gave an inch. But even if I did come, wouldn't that make it awkward with Tess? I think she wants to be with you a lot. I hadn't thought of that. Roxy stood stock still, eyes fixed on the nurse's cabin where Tess was slowly coming out the doorway. Then Roxy shook her head. No, I don't think it will cause a problem. I think our night together in the tree branches taught Tess a lot.
Well, okay, Heather tried to sound resigned, but couldn't keep some of Roxy's contagious excitement from her face. I suppose I might as well try it. You can only die once, you know. During the weeks in between Up With Teens Camp and the backpacking camp, Roxy remembered Heather's comic statement several times and laughed. She kept busy helping Missy and Suzanne, participating in everything at the different camps on the grounds, and faithfully practicing her swimming. She hadn't gotten over her initial feeling of fear before plunging in each time, but gradually she became more confident. She could swim to the float and back easily. She could even do a few of the harder strokes instead of relying on side strokes to get her where she wanted to go. Her swimsuit was showing signs of hard use, and one day she called to her mother, "I'll need a new suit before school starts. I'm going to keep up with lessons at the Y or somewhere so I don't backslide." The week of backpacking camp dawned the brightest of the summer. Lazy white clouds rode their bright blue highway and reflected in every shimmering stream. Missy, Suzanne, Tess, Heather, Roxy and Granny gathered with Uncle Ned, Jeff, two male counsellors and five other boys early in the morning. They drove to a good place to leave the vans and their experience began. Never had the girls worked so hard. Even the practice hikes hadn't prepared them for this. Yet with every rise of the ground, a new view presented its beauty and made the struggle worthwhile. "I didn't know there were any places like this anywhere in the whole world," Tess gasped when they finally reached their destination. Roxy couldn't agree more. "Look at that lake. Did you ever see anything bluer? And the white glacier and the green trees and the aspens already starting to turn gold. It's a kaleidoscope." "Let's get camp set up, girls," Granny reminded with a smile, surrounded by curly white hair. "Plenty of time to enjoy God's creation after the work is done." "How come you aren't all out of breath?" Heather demanded. Granny's smile was wise. "You notice I didn't run up the trail and stop and rest. I took it at a steady pace." The smile expanded, filling her entire face. "That's how I take life, too." "I hope when I'm your age I can be that healthy," Heather hugged Granny. "I wish I were that healthy now," Tess added, dropping to the ground to catch her breath. "I never saw anyone old before who could do what you just did and not even act tired." "Tess," Roxy looked anxiously at Granny. Had Tess hurt her feelings? Granny just laughed at Tess's embarrassment. "That's the best compliment you could ever give me. Now let's fly at the chores." The days rushed by too rapidly. Early morning dips in the freezing water, hopping out almost before their swimsuits got wet, Heather said, between chattering teeth, rising with frost on their sleeping bags from the high altitude, having to allow extra cooking time for their food for the same reason. Long evenings, when tired by hiking, they gathered around the fire and talked about things that really mattered. The world, God, peace, friendship, school, all the things that touched their lives. "It was hard enough leaving camp. How are we ever going to leave all this?" Tess disconsolately poked at the ground with a stick one evening as they surrounded the campfire, clad in heavy clothing, but unwilling to abandon the fire and each other's company for their warm sleeping bags. During the days together she had lost her shyness and had begun to share some of her own deep feelings. "You don't have to leave it, Tess," Granny said quietly. "It's yours, always. When things get tough, find a quiet place and remember these days." She waited, but when Tess didn't answer, she continued, "This experience is only one of God's gifts. An even better gift is knowing His Spirit will be with us wherever we are, if we accept Jesus' sacrifice for us." "I know." A look of understanding replaced Tess's gloom. The entire group sat bolt upright. Roxy felt a burst of joy inside. The 15 backpackers had come to love one another in a special way during their outing, and what a climax to the trip. Jeff was first to speak. "When, Tess?" She shook her dark head. "I don't exactly know when it all came together.
and I knew everything I'd heard was really true, that Jesus loved me. But last night when Roxy woke us up to see the moon shining on the glacier and making it as bright as day, well, I just asked God to forgive me for what I'd been and told him that from here on I wanted him to be my very best friend the way Roxy said. I didn't say anything today because I guess I just wanted to make sure it was real. It's the realest thing that will ever happen to you, Tess. Uncle Ned poked the fire until the embers blazed up and highlighted them all. It doesn't mean you'll never have any problems. It does mean that God will give you the strength and courage to face them. Roxy jumped to her feet. It's really true. She knew her voice was strained, but she didn't care. She could see Tess watching her, a wistful longing for something to reassure her even more plainly stamped on her face. I never thought I'd tell anyone this, but I was so scared of water I thought I'd die when Mom and Dad said I had to learn to swim. She moistened her lips, remembering. Mom said the same thing Uncle Ned just said. God hasn't taken away the fear even yet, but I'm able to swim because he gave me courage to tackle it anyway. You're quite a girl, Roxy. Jeff's spontaneous tribute echoed around the circle before he looked back at Tess. So are you. Roxy's heart thumped, and she knew Tess was as pleased as she was at the quick response. When they cuddled in their sleeping bags that night, Tess between Heather and Roxy, she said, That lady you told me about was right, Roxy. I guess God really does go to an awful lot of trouble to reach us. I'm glad. She fell asleep with one arm under her head, a new look of joy on her face that Roxy could see in the light of the bright overhead stars. And then it was the last morning, the last afternoon. They had seen all kinds of animals except bears, but on their final hike they saw a lumbering black animal atop a distant ridge. Field glasses brought it close, but gave them the necessary distance to stay safely away in case it was mean, as bears sometimes are. Roxy felt she would suffocate as she took her turn with the glasses. Tess was exuberant, and Jeff and the others just as excited. Even while they watched, the bear disappeared over the ridge, leaving them in possession of the beautiful mountain meadow with its wild flowers untrodden by civilization. Even usually controlled Heather babbled about the bear as, exhausted but happy, they ate their last supper and let their final campfire die. A slight breeze whispered secrets to the aspens, and in minutes their graceful yellowing leaves filled the air like golden snowflakes. They swirled and danced until Heather commented, a real confetti shower. Her eyes sought out Roxy in a meaningful glance. Roxy started, shaken from the bittersweet mood the last campfire had brought, a combination of joy and sadness that it was over. Summer was over as well. The backpacking camp was the last of the season. Roxy fought back the tears as she thought, First I didn't want to come, now I don't want to leave. The falling leaves are kind of a symbol, aren't they? Jeff lounged against his pack. They represent all of us and all the neat things we've shared. In the silence that followed, Roxy's mind raced, sorting out all those things. Her feelings, Tess, being caught in a storm, Janice, seeing the bear, Jeff, the closeness of the group, Missy, Suzanne, Granny, Uncle Ned, Heather, all the others. Her inquiring eyes rested on Tess, so different now from what she had been a few weeks before. Then her thoughts returned to the capering leaves. Yes, and they are a whole lot more than paper confetti, because what they stand for is real. The End.